is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
McCoy at the 10, at the 5, into the end zone. Touchdown! What a great run! He's in trouble. He is dropped. Kyle Williams dropping. Oh, baby, what a hit. Tyrod Brooks. Tyrod on the run. Nobody in front of him. Touchdown! There's T-Mobile.
He gonna come through.
Sammy in the end zone. Got it! Got it! Touchdown! Sammy Watkins. Touchdown, Buffalo! McCoy, touch to the right. Outrunning everybody. 10, 5. Touchdown! Touchdown! Touchdown, Buffalo!
Live from One Bills Drive. This is the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts.
And welcome to the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. From One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio, Chris Brown in for John Murphy, who's got some special duties today.
Yeah, he does.
With Donald Jones. Mm-hmm. And you're going to be seeing a lot of me in the next couple of weeks here.
I think so.
Murph's going to be on a little hiatus.
He is. Actually, you know, I have some things coming up as well, so we're going to have to talk about some, you know.
You're both going to leave me hanging. Really cool, guys. Thanks so much.
Here, sorry about that.
Thank you so much.
Sorry about that.
But, yeah, we're gonna roll today. We got a jam-packed show. Zay Jones will be by a little bit later on this afternoon in the 2 o'clock hour. So he'll be joining us, has done well since he returned from a sprained knee. So We're excited to talk to him and just get some more of his thoughts on how he's progressing and assimilating himself into this offense and getting used to the quarterbacks as they roll through back there in the spring practices. We'll also have Mary Wilson on later this afternoon. She'll be helping us out and maybe talking and shedding a little bit more light on the top 10 most memorable moments in Bills history as that television series gets underway on MSG for our viewers watching right now. Those will be airing on Mondays at 9 p.m. For the next several weeks, with the exception of the July 4th week. Mm-hmm. So we look forward to seeing those and seeing what our crack staff on the video side at BuffaloBills.com will be putting together for our entertainment pleasure. So that'll be nice. As you see the schedule, the MS viewers are seeing the schedule there now. So tonight, on the 19th next Monday, the 26th the Monday after that, and then they take a break for July 4th week before concluding with the last two draft diamonds and individual performances. And I know Murph got interviewed for this series. I was interviewed for this series.
Yeah, I was in this one as well.
So, yeah, it'll be
draft diamonds.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool. They go to the undrafted guy for the draft diamonds?
Yeah, you know, one of the best friends. One of my best friends, you know, so.
I got you. And I know who that is.
Yep.
But, yeah, so we look forward to that. And Mary Wilson, who was obviously also interviewed for that series, we'll be on to kind of shed a little bit more light on what she was asked about, what she kind of offered to the program. So we look forward to that. We'll talk a little bit. We'll mix in a little NBA here today. I know you've got some strong opinions on a couple of things, but we'll have an NFL tie into it. So it won't be exclusive Warriors-Cavs kind of stuff for 10 or 15 minutes.
But did you watch the game Friday?
I caught bits and pieces. I kind of had a good feeling where it was headed.
Yeah.
And so I preferred sleep over watching the rest of it.
Since you brought up sleep, let's get into some story time.
Oh, is there Donald Jones story time?
This is Donald Jones story time.
There's Murph story time. But
yeah,
this
is Donald Jones story time. So this weekend, Friday, I had to go down to the Catskills for a football camp down there, which was Saturday morning. So I was going down Friday night to spend the night at the camp, wake up Saturday morning, and coach the kids. I drive down. I get into the Catskills. It's about 10:30, 11 at night. I'm listening to the game on the radio.
Okay.
Now, I get on this one road, and when I got on the road, my GPS was on. I could see that there was a river next. It was a cliff, and there was a huge drop-off to a river. And so I start driving up this road, windy road. And like 10 minutes in, my GPS said I had like 30 miles on this one road. Like 10 minutes in, cell phone service goes out. No service. And I don't know anything about this area. And it's pitch black out there. So I was like, you know what? I think I'm going to just turn back around and go back to this little town, Hancock. Went back to this little town. I slept in the car. I listened to the game, the rest of the game, and slept in the car Friday night.
Wow. Okay.
I laid across the back seat of the car and went to sleep, man, and in a McDonald's parking lot.
Okay. You had a far more interesting weekend than I did. That is.
I woke up about 5:30 in the morning, and daylight was, you know, was coming up, and I was like, all right, now I can get back on that road.
Wow. And when did your service come back?
Here was the bad thing. I rented a car to go down there, and you know, cars usually ask you if you want navigation. They didn't ask me that. I didn't even know this car had navigation in it, so I didn't even need my cell phone navigation, GPS, because the car had it. So when I woke up in the morning, I'm looking through everything, and it was like, oh man, there's navigation on this car. Like, I could have made it.
You just slept in the back of a car
for
no
reason. It was cold.
I'm sure it was bad.
It was bad, man. It was a bad Friday night.
That is rough.
You got to do what you got to do. Talk about dedication.
I'll give that to you. I don't know if your planning was well executed.
It was bad. It was.
It was there's so a lot dark. There's a lot of little towns that you drive through, and the only reason I know that drive is because growing up on Long Island, and then I went to college at Geneseo, so I used to have to do the 6-hour drive.
Mm-hmm.
17. I mean, I know it like the back of my hand. 390.
Stuff.
Not 390 by Rochester. We're talking 390 by, like, Wayland.
Right. You know? Way down there. I saw Wayland, yes.
I know all of those exits. So I can relate to what you're doing. Roscoe, New York, coming mm-hmm. down through there after Binghamton. Ton of places. I know both ends of this state better than most. Just all the little exits and tiny podunk towns that what's that diner? Blue Dolphin. Right on
diner.
The turn there before – oh, boy, right before Roscoe.
This one was bad, man. Friday night, it was tough. But, you know, I got a chance to listen to the game at least. So
yeah, you didn't miss much. I kind of felt like – I never felt like the Warriors were going to have a run in there to get back in it. I mean, an 18-point lead isn't safe against the Warriors, but they just weren't shooting as well as they were in the first three games. So.
You know, I was listening, and then I was on my phone because I went back down into that town. I had service there.
Yeah.
But, you know, once I got back on that road, I didn't. But I was on my phone on Twitter, and everybody's like, oh, man, the refs are horrible. The NBA is rigged. Like, that's all I saw on Twitter. The NBA is rigged.
I'm sure the NBA didn't want to sweep.
I'm sure. It couldn't have been good for the NBA.
But
they wanted to keep going.
The Cavs did shoot better in that game, I will say that. So,
and that's the thing with
that
Golden
wasn't
State.
The case in the first couple. I mean, Korver couldn't hit the side of a barn.
Right.
You know? J.R. Smith couldn't put it in the ocean.
He couldn't.
And he had a better game. You know, he kind of picked them up a little bit better from range. So
we'll see
if it continues
tonight.
But the news that we're kind of, you know, digesting here, you know, today, and now that it's the afternoon, I was going to say this morning, you know, is Jeremy Maclin is supposed to make a decision on where he's going to play his football in 2017. And it looks like it's a two-horse race.
Mm-hmm.
I've tried to see if there were other potential dark horse candidates where he did not make a visit but is still considering. And all indications are this is a two-horse race between the Bills and the Ravens. And, you know, we've all kind of speculated, what does Jeremy Maclin want, aside from money?
Mm-hmm.
And I think if you look at the landscape, you know, he's the only guy of his caliber on the market. I mean, he's even, in my opinion, he's even better than Eric Decker.
Yeah.
So he could take as long as he wants, in my opinion. I mean, maybe the Ravens get restless and, you know, talk turkey with the Jets. They reportedly had talked to the Jets about Eric Decker and
mm-hmm.
doing a trade. But I would be inclined to think, why are you going to give up something if they're just going to release him anyway? Especially a guy coming off shoulder surgery. So maybe the Ravens get restless because they are very desperate.
Mm-hmm.
They are more desperate than the Bills in terms of addressing their receiving core because they just lost their top receiver from last year. Dennis Pitta had 86 catches last year.
Right.
And for Maclin, you say, well, what's the attraction in Baltimore? The attraction is you walk right into a number one receiving role.
Yeah.
You know, Breshad Perriman is not a proven receiver. He's not ready to be a number one. I'm sure they hope he eventually develops into that. And then you've got Mike Wallace, who, for all intents and purposes, is a one-dimensional receiver.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's a go-route guy, and that's great. You need a guy that can stretch the field, but he doesn't do a whole lot more than that for them. So if he's signing a one-year deal, which I'm kind of anticipating at this point mm-hmm. in time, because I don't see the Bills hand – if I'm Tom Condon, and I'm not an agent expert, but if I'm his agent, if I'm not getting a three-year deal with a whole lot of front-loaded money,
right,
just give me a one-year deal.
One-year deal. with the signing.
Let me make my hay this year and then go back on the market next year where I've got 32 teams bidding on my services, not two, in a restricted market financially because a lot of people have already spent their money. I'm still dumbfounded that Tennessee hasn't jumped in the mix here. I'm shocked. I mean, I know I was on your guys' show last week, and we kind of tried to sift through the potential suitors for him. I mean, their top receivers are Rishard Matthews and Corey Davis. And they have $43 million in cap space.
Yeah.
How are they not after this guy? I don't know.
I think they were happy with Tajay Sharpe down there as well.
Yeah.
Didn't he become their number one?
Yeah, kind of, sort of, yeah. I mean, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Tajay Sharpe and Jeremy Maclin,
yeah,
I mean,
you have money.
They're not in the same sentence.
Right.
So for me, I don't know. I thought that they would – they've got money to spend. They got money to burn.
They got money to burn. And they have a quarterback who is on the rise, you know.
Right.
And so you need a legit weapon outside, somebody who's reliable, who's gotten it done, where that quarterback is comfortable with him, you know. But
I suppose maybe the concern there is – we're going to have to pay Mariota some big money here very soon.
Soon.
And maybe that's what gobbles it up. I don't know. But I was surprised. Maybe they think, you know, we're not making the leap to Super Bowl contender.
Mm-hmm.
And it's probably not going to happen in Macklin's span of when he can help us. You know, maybe this year, next year. So maybe they say, let's leave that alone.
Yeah.
We'll invest long-term in Mariota. And then we'll try to get all the other pieces that we feel we still need. But it surprised me because I think that is a team on the rise. I think they already have a lot of pieces in place.
Right.
And putting Maclin in their receiving core where he could also be a number one as I see it anyway, that just looked like a really good fit to me.
Now, you talk about Baltimore and Maclin stepping in to be a number one right away in Baltimore. Is Eric Decker – I mean, if they were to trade for him, is he a number one?
I think he's a really good number two.
Right.
I don't think he's a guy that can carry a receiving core.
I just don't see it. Right.
Even in his prime.
He was never a number one.
No. And he was productive, but I think he was doing that.
Because he had help.
Like, Demaryius Thomas is on the other side.
And Peyton Manning throwing you the ball.
Right. I mean, all of that helps.
Mm-hmm.
And they had Julius Thomas at tight end back then.
Exactly.
So, you know, you look at that and you say, well, of course he was productive. Nobody was covering him. I mean, your third best cover guy was covering that guy every Sunday. That must be nice. You know, but I don't think he's capable of being number one. But again, Baltimore is in a beggar can't be chooser situation.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Dennis Pitta, I was surprised because I looked it up. Because, you know, you think of Dennis Pitta and you just think hip injury, hip injury, hip injury. This guy hasn't been productive. And you say to yourself, well, okay, they lost him. Yes, you need to. But their receiving core needs help. You know, not just the tight end position. And they have some depth at tight end and some young guys ready to step. Max Williams, the former draft pick, is a guy that I think they expect to fill that role. Maybe not to an 86-catch plateau, but I think Maclin, this is what concerns me, at least in terms of the Bills. Maclin, in all likelihood, is probably going with a one-year deal, whether it's Baltimore or Buffalo. And when that is the deal that's on the table that you're going to be taking, you want to be as productive as you can in the offense you're going to because you know you're going on the market just
again,
1 year from now.
Right.
And the opportunity to be productive is probably better in Baltimore than it is here, not only because he would be the number one receiver right away, but also because you've got a number two receiver that isn't proven, and a one-dimensional receiver in Mike Wallace who maybe catches five touchdowns, all of the 25-yard-plus variety. Mm-hmm. And the tight end that Joe Flacco depended upon, any time a third down came up or, you know, a must-have situation, he's gone.
Right.
So the more – I mean, would you disagree?
No, it's true. And Joe Flacco himself, a guy who's won a Super Bowl. You know,
that helps.
It's going to help. Now, I would guess some of their cap, they've cleared some space now with Pittock, right? Coming
about $2.5 million, so not a ton. So they've got about $5 million to play with.
So they're going to have to give him some bonus money.
Yeah, you got to incentivize it,
yeah,
you know, who knows? Maybe you may have to clip somebody. Well, you're going to have to move somebody off the roster for him anyway.
Somebody.
But
right.
Maybe it's somebody more important than people are anticipating to save some money too. But you know, we'll have to see how that all shakes out. Because here in Buffalo, I think maybe the attraction is I won't get all the attention, mm-hmm. and maybe I can be productive that way, because all the attention is going to be on Sammy Watkins. All the attention is going to be on LeSean McCoy. And so maybe I'm looking at more single high safety looks. Maybe I'm looking at more one-on-ones on my side of the field.
Right.
Maybe I can be more productive that way. So I think that's the decision he's probably wrestling with here, because mm-hmm. I've got to believe that the money is relatively comparable. I don't know. I think it's going to be really interesting to see, because I don't think that's an easy decision to make, and clearly he decided he wanted to take the weekend to do that with his wife and make the best call for him. I don't know. What do you think? Do you think he gets more targets in Baltimore to make more plays because he's the number one, or do you think he gets more opportunity here because of all the attention being paid to the other weapons?
Now, I know down in Baltimore, their number one receiver gets a lot of passes.
Yeah.
You know, Kamar used to talk to me about that all the time, you know, because, you know, when he was their number one, he had like he had like 80 catches or something like that, you know, and then anybody else.
So that's probably 100 targets, maybe more.
For him, right. So anybody else in that offense is not getting, I mean, those guys are going to get like 30, 40 catches, something like that. Now, if he was to come here, he's not. He might not have that many catches. I do know that, you know, he fits as the type of receiver that Tyrod Taylor likes in terms of going down the field, and you know, so he'll probably look at the offense and say, "That's a good offense for me." I can see really both sides of it. My question becomes: I mean, if he was to come here, you have Sammy, who they didn't pick up his fifth-year option, and you'll have Jeremy. If he signs a one-year deal, you have a decision to make in the offseason next year. So is that something that he thinks about?
I don't think he's worried about that. I think he's worried about where can I be the most productive so I can cash in next year.
Yeah.
I don't care if it's Buffalo, Baltimore, Timbuktu. Mm-hmm. Where can I cash in based on a productive – because it's true. He does have to kind of reestablish himself as a productive receiver in this league. He's coming off career lows across the board. Receptions, receiving yards, touchdowns, because of groin injuries primarily. Mm-hmm. He fought through those and still dragged himself out on the field every week, and that's commendable. But this is a what-have-you-done-for-me-lately league.
Exactly.
So this year, on a one-year deal, he's got to produce. Maybe not like a number one, but I think he's got to be somewhere between 65 and 80 catches for anywhere from 900 to 1,200 yards.
Yep.
7 to 10 touchdowns. I think that's what he's got to put up if he wants to make
big
money,
as
a 30-year-old next year.
Right.
Don't you think? I mean,
I would think so. He has to put up numbers like that. And I'm sure, because he's good friends with DeSean Jackson, he wants to be paid at 30 years old like DeSean Jackson got. 3 years, $33 million.
I don't know.
He would have to put up huge numbers.
$10 million a year?
I don't see it happening.
Yeah, I don't either.
Unless he blows it up.
He's got to have an all-world season.
Right. You know, now if he comes out and blows it up, then yeah. But see, what DeSean Jackson didn't have those types of injuries. He's been productive.
Right.
You know, and so a team like Tampa wasn't afraid to give him that type of money at 30, 31 years old. So Jeremy Maclin is coming out those injuries. I'm interested to see what he gets for this contract. You know, if it's a one-year deal, like what type of money are teams willing to give him? I understand that teams are desperate.
Yeah.
But you are coming off of career lows across the board.
Can you see it being – I can't see it being much more than six, can you?
In terms of base salary?
Deal? Yeah, like five, six,
I would say five, six, yeah.
Somewhere
five, six with, you know, a nice enough signing bonus. And
maybe he's got a chance to make eight if he
– Right, and incentives.
Yeah.
If you can
get to eight.
Play however many games – you hit these in terms of catches and yards and stuff like touchdowns. I would think, you know, it can go up. I would think his contract is going to be incentive laden. Like it's going to be like that. I'm interested to see like what he gets in terms of a signing bonus and how long the contract is.
So Bills fans, try to be your best objective self as best you can.
Yeah.
Put yourself in Jeremy Maclin's shoes and tell us where you think on a one-year deal Jeremy Maclin can be more productive. Can he be more productive in Buffalo with other weapons drawing more attention, or is it in Baltimore where he's the number one guy?
Yeah.
I want to believe that he can make plays in this offense for selfish reasons.
Mm-hmm.
To me, it just seems pretty cut and dry where he's going to get more opportunities on the field. Now, that being said, and I don't think anybody in Buffalo wants this scenario, but we know what Sammy's injury history is. And, you know, it's all is supposed to go right come training camp. He's already back practicing on a limited basis. Those are all encouraging signs. Coach McDermott fell short of saying last week that he's ahead of schedule. Somebody wanted him to put that on Sammy, and he wouldn't do it.
Right.
Purposely would not say ahead of schedule. He just said he's doing very well. We're glad to see him out there doing some work, and it's a one day at a time situation. And I think that speaks to the unpredictable nature of this particular injury. And you can use Dez Bryant as an example.
Mm-hmm.
You can use Julio Jones as an example. I saw last week that Julio Jones had had another foot surgery.
This offseason?
Fortunately, it was just to remove a bunion. Not to gross anybody out, but I was just glad it wasn't the same foot injury that he's had a couple of surgeries on already. We know Sammy has had a couple of surgeries. This is that Jones fracture on the outside of the foot where, because receivers, with so much torque that they put on their feet from route running and having to go from 100 miles an hour to zero, you know, dropping all their weight, all that torque they put on their feet, they get these breaks sometimes. But it's got a high rate of recurrence, even if they put a screw in there to stabilize it. So where that is, I don't know. But I think Coach McDermott playing it cautiously and not putting any extra pressure on Sammy by saying he's ahead of schedule or giving anybody a false sense of hope, he's just leaving it alone, saying this is the plan going forward. But knowing his history or his recent history, I don't know if Jeremy Maclin wonders. Maybe I will be the number one.
And that was my thing. I think I talked about this last week. You know, if Sammy was to go down again, and we're talking about an injury where it does reoccur quite often, if he was to go down again, Coach McDermott and the Bills, I don't think they want to. First of all, if Sammy goes down, who becomes your number one after that? Like,
yeah, it's a mess then.
Exactly. You know, so you're back in the situation you were last year. Is you don't have another guy who you could say, all right, this guy is a solid number two who can play the role of a number one, even if it's just a couple weeks. You know, so that's why I think the Bills are like, all right, we have a shot at this guy. We need to do what we can do, or do what we have to do to get him here, because you don't know what's going to happen with Sammy Watkins. We all want to see him play 16 games and have a crazy breakout season, but it's just unpredictable. And so you want to make sure that you have another guy who can step in and be a number one, because I'm telling you, if you don't have that guy, who is going to be that guy? If you don't sign Jeremy Maclin, who can step in and be a number one? I don't think we have that answer yet.
Yeah, and I think we've already discussed that. As a consolation prize, I don't know that Eric Decker is a one either. Never been one. I don't think at, you know, this stage in his career he's ready to be one. He would certainly upgrade your offense.
Yeah.
And could be a very good number two
mm-hmm.
next to Sammy Watkins. So, you know, that's something that we'll probably get into in the next segment. But for now, at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550, weigh in on this Maclin situation. Do you fear that he sees the better opportunity in Baltimore based on his production potential so he can cash in next year? Of course, we're all going under the assumption that he's probably looking at a one-year deal right now. And I can't see either team, you know, committing much beyond that at this point in time. They're just looking to upgrade their offense this year. And, you know, who knows? Based on how things play out in Baltimore or in Buffalo, maybe they do re-sign this guy and
mm-hmm.
go a step forward after that, and maybe they commit more to him in terms of years on a contract at age 30. It's possible. We saw it happen with DeSean Jackson, although mm-hmm. he's a little bit different case and still very much a big play receiver.
I can see like a 2-year or 1 year with a, you know, a second year being a team option type of thing, you know, if he blows it out of the water. Kind of like, you know, they'll have a decision to make on Tyrod moving forward with that option,
mm-hmm.
something like that. Just because for your cap, if you have a guy and you pay him, let's just say $6 million or $7 million in terms of base salary, $5 million in terms of base salary, you know, he's going to be $5 million against your cap if it's a true one-year deal. So, I don't know. They'll have to figure that one out. I would think that if just – looking at how they structured Tyrod Taylor's deal this year and last year, they would probably do something like that, like a, you know, 1 year with the team option to pick it up if he blows it out of the water, and they still have to figure out what they're going to do with Sammy Watkins anyway.
And maybe Baltimore has to do that because they can't pay him a ton of money.
They can't pay him, right.
And just go year with an option for year two.
Mm-hmm.
I'm guessing that's going to have to be – I wonder if you'd have to make that a player option to make it more attractive.
Wow, yeah.
Give him the – say, hey, this is how bad we want you. We'll give you the option in year two of this deal to make this money, and this is what it would be. If you still – if you have a blow-up year and you want to go out on the market, we're going to give you the opportunity to do that. So it's still a one-year deal, but there's a hook there.
Yeah.
At his discretion.
Mm-hmm. They do that
that's
in the
probably – Yeah, I think there are player options, I believe.
It's rare, though, right? That players get the option?
Who do I want to – I want to say there was a Bills player that had that recently. I'm going to have to look that up, but I want to say I saw that recently, like in the last two or three years.
Wow.
I'm going to have to look that up.
In the NBA, they do it. And
I'm not going to pretend my memory's the best. That's why I write everything down, but just ask my wife. I think – I want to say that happened. I want to say I think I'm right on that, but I'm going to have to look that one up. 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. You want to weigh in on the Macklin decision. It's supposed to come down today. And if you're fearful that the best fit for him in terms of opportunity and production might be in Baltimore. So that's kind of where we're at. We're dissecting it probably 17 different ways because nobody really truly knows what Jeremy Macklin's thinking. I think after he signs, he'll probably shed some light on why felt he was the best fit here or there and probably explain it all. Because I know if he decides on Baltimore, he's going to probably have some explaining to do to LeSean McCoy. Like, hey,
factor in this thing, you know, just those connections. The connections with LeSean, the connections with the Bills quarterback coach, Coach Culley. You know, how much does that weigh into his decision as well?
Trust factor and all of that stuff.
Right.
Yeah, and you have to believe that on his visit down to Baltimore, they were trying to sell him on the same thing. You can trust us. You know, we're an organization that does right by its people, but that's what everybody's going to
Everybody says that, yeah.
But, yeah, he has known Culley for a long, long time, and he's coaching the quarterback. So knowing that guy's in there talking to the quarterbacks about you, you got to feel good about that.
You got to feel good about that.
803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. Donald and I are going to step aside, but on the other side, we'll talk a little bit more Macklin, but spin it into what's going on with the Jets and Eric Decker. Here's another potential receiver on the market that maybe really wasn't expected to be there and how it can kind of impact the decision-making here at One Bills Drive. That's coming up next here on the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Back on the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts here at One Bills Drive. Chris Brown in for John Murphy, along with Donald Jones. And we're talking Macklin. The decision's supposed to come down today, according to Ian Rappaport of NFL Network, saying that Macklin's going to make his decision today after thinking about things over the weekend. And we're kind of debating, and I'm a little bit concerned, you know, that Macklin may see a greater opportunity to be productive in Baltimore because he'd walk in and be the number one guy. Can he really be as productive here? I suppose it's possible. The concern there also, though, is, and granted, it's a new offensive scheme, but the Bills were 29th and 31st the last 2 years in pass attempts per game. It's about 27 and change. And if you're only throwing 27 times a game, I don't think a receiver is going to look at that as all that appealing.
No.
And I should, and I'll try to do it in the next break, I'll look up the pass attempts per game for Baltimore, but and I got to believe it's higher than that.
If the Bills are throwing 27 times a game, how many of those are going to Shady, his boy?
Well, and that's the other thing. And what did Shady tell us during OTAs in terms of what's different between the last game and this game? The backs are going to catch the ball a lot. And you got Patrick DeMarco here, too, who's known as a fullback that catches out of the backfield. So there's another 20 or 30, you know, targets, maybe 40 targets and 30 receptions, you know, for DeMarco this year. So you're like, how many balls am I getting? That's what concerns me. I think the Bills could pony up a little bit more money than the Ravens, and maybe that helps, you know, make up the difference there, but there's a real concern here on my part.
It depends on the actual contract. If you're talking about a one-year deal, all right, I understand. If I can go on somewhere and catch 80 balls and I'm a cash in again next year, then I'll go there. I might take a little bit less money this year to cash in again next year.
Yeah.
You know,
it's a big if, but you're betting on you, and if you believe in yourself. Yeah. Like, that's what Tyrod did when he came here. 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550, the number to call to join the Macklin conversation. We've got Matt in Saratoga Springs ready to lead us off here on the show. Matt, thanks for joining us. What do you got?
Hey, guys, how we doing?
Good.
Good. So here's my take on it, and I've heard you guys talk and a lot of guys talk over the last couple of days. I think with Macklin, with his age and with, you know, his injuries over the last couple seasons, I think being a strong number two would be the best thing he could do behind Watkins. I mean, I think he goes to Baltimore as a number one. They throw to him a ton. He gets hurt. I think being a number two wouldn't be a bad idea for him. He's got connections with the coaching staff, with the players. I think it's a great place for him. And like you said, if he has a drop that awesome season, we offer him more next year, or he goes off and earns $6-8 million next year. We'll see. But I think that it's a great move, especially for his future, or his past health and his age especially. I think it's a great match, and if I could call him right now and talk to him, I probably would.
Matt, it would be hard for you to convince him that he's a number two. You couldn't even try to sell him on that. There's no way you can tell a guy, listen, look.
We like you a lot.
Yeah, we like you a lot, but really you're a number two. Like, because in that guy's mind, I'm a number one receiver. I don't care what I did last year, what I didn't do last year. I am a number one receiver in this league. I've been a number one receiver in this league, even though he's been a number two for most of his career. I mean, he was alongside DeSean Jackson. But when he went to Kansas City, he was their number one guy. And so, you know, I'm sure he still believes he is the number one guy, and he wants to show people that he can be the number one guy.
Right. And your points are valid. I think they're kind of interesting, as a matter of fact. It's kind of a different spin on the argument, and we thank you for doing it. We appreciate the call, Matt.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah, but I think it is interesting, like, thinking about prolonging your career in the way that Matt presented is kind of different than, I think, the way most players traditionally think.
Right.
And the way most agents traditionally think, which is, where can we be productive? Let's just do that, because people care about production. Because production usually equals more points. More points means more wins. And people are going to value that in the league. So if you're productive, you'll have higher value on the open market next year. I still think that's the predominant line of thinking.
That's the
and I don't see it changing. It's kind of a progressive way to look at that. I just think the situation that precedes what 2017 will be for Macklin doesn't make that necessarily possible. If he was coming off a productive year in 16 in Kansas City,
yeah,
you know, not ridiculous season, but somewhat productive in line with some of the numbers he put up earlier in his career in Philadelphia when he was the number two next to DeSean Jackson, well, then maybe I say, okay, slide into a number two role here, do the same stuff, convince people that you can still be productive for another two or three seasons. And maybe that is the way to go. But coming off career lows across the board, you got to turn it up and get it done as best as you possibly can. Otherwise, I think it's going to be hard to make money. You'll find a job because you're proven player in the league. You're Jeremy Macklin. But I don't think you're making the money you're hoping to be making.
Right, exactly. You know, I know from a player's standpoint how guys think. And if you go into something with an open mind, then, you know, all is game. But for the most part, when you have a guy like this who is proven, he's put up numbers, he's even been a number one at some point. At 29 years old, I'm sure he still feels like, I still got it and I still can be a number one receiver, you know. And it's hard when you look at both the situations and say, look at Baltimore. I can be the number one guy. Look at what Steve Smith got last year and the year before he got hurt. I can go there and catch that many passes, or I can go to Buffalo and be the number two guy, and they only throw the ball 27 times a game.
Right.
You know, it's even with the connections and his best friends and all of that stuff being here, when you think about it from that standpoint, even if Baltimore said, look, we only can give you a one-year deal with this money right now, I would think that he would. And I'm not trying to, you know, sound bad and put the fear into Bills fans, but just being honest, when he looks at that situation in Baltimore as he can be their number one guy, I would think that he would jump all over that.
Here's another situation that he's going to be looking at. And we talked about this in the last segment, and I've looked it up. Pass attempts per game, okay? Mm-hmm. So I mentioned in 2015, the Bills were 29th or 30th at 27 pass attempts per game. So last year, they went up to 29.6 pass attempts per game.
The Bills.
Yes. You want to know where that ranked in the league?
30th.
Last. 32nd. Baltimore in 2017, pass attempts per game, 42.4. You want to know where that ranked?
Top 15.
Number one. Number one in the league last year. More than the Saints at 42.1. Cardinals at 40 and change. Jacksonville, Green Bay, Philly. Now, part of that is, you know, I mean, game situations determine some of that to a degree.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you think about Baltimore's season last year. They were 8-8. Joe Flacco had to throw the heck out of the ball because their running back situation was a mess. Justin Forsett's there. Then he's not there. Then the next guy's injured. They were supremely shorthanded at the running back position. They had nobody they felt they could trust back there. So it quickly became, hey, Joe, drop back and chuck it.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Ravens don't hope that number's that high this year
because
they're going to get their quarterback killed.
Now, can you also look at it if you're Jeremy Maclin from this standpoint? Look, I understand what the pass attempts were, and I'm sure they probably talked to him about this when they met with him. This is where the pass attempts were last year. Game situation, all of that stuff comes into play, but this is a totally new staff. New offensive coordinator, new system, a system that this quarterback is supposed to be, you know, good in, or this fits his style of play.
Better than the last one.
Yeah, so, you know, 29 attempts per game. You're talking about 29 attempts per game. The Bills were a lot down in games as well. You know, where at the end of games, you needed to throw the ball, and they still are dead last.
I hear you.
So I would think that a new coaching staff, new offensive coordinator would probably throw it a little bit more. Even though you're still going to be a run-first team, I'm sure they're probably telling him, like, listen, this is a clean slate. Whatever happened last year, none of that stuff matters because it's a totally new staff, totally new scheme.
803-0550, the number to get on board. We're going to go back to the phones. Let's go to Justin in Lockport. Justin, moves for the future. What say you?
Actually, it's more about Maclin still. I was just wondering, with a healthy Sammy Watkins and Maclin in the picture if he signed here, don't you think the Bills would be able to get a lot more first downs and really increase the amount of attempts per game?
Well, I mean, I think you could certainly make that argument. I don't know if, you know, you would definitively say, well, you've got Maclin and Watkins both healthy on the field. We're going to throw 40 times a game now.
Right.
You're not going to change. I don't know if you're going to change the identity of this team per se.
The amount of first downs that they'd be able to get in moving the ball. I mean, you had Robert Woods when he was there sometimes getting number one receiver targets. And when he got hurt, we were down to nothing.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I kind of look at it this way. I see Maclin as drawing more attention outside, and maybe that loosens up the box a little bit. Maybe there are fewer eight-man boxes if you've got Sammy Watkins and Maclin out there, you know, in the formation, split wide. You know, you probably have – maybe you're playing more cover two, and you've got safeties rolling over the top so their guys don't get beat deep, and now it's a seven-man box for Shady, and he's getting first downs that way. I think it's only going to encourage them to run the ball more if they can get more of those looks and force them to bring somebody in the box, and now you take your shot.
Now, I think the Bills would want to be around somewhere 30 to 35, which is where Denver was last year with Coach Dennison, who he was in Denver last year, which was 18th in the league, you know, at 35.6 attempts per game.
Mm-hmm.
So you would look at it, that's right in basically in the middle of the pack. And that's a true balanced offense, I would think, here in Buffalo. They're still going to run the ball. You're not going to change the identity of your offense. But if you can bring the pass attempts right to the middle of the pack and you're actually completing those passes, I think you're doing well if you're the Bills. And you look at it from Denver from last year, that's where they were, 35.6. And Macklin will look at that and say, all right, the biggest problem is how much of that is going to the running backs. It seems like even the tight ends are going to be more involved in the offense this year.
We'll continue this conversation on the other side. Mark and Lackawanna, hang tight. Clarence in Buffalo, you stay there too. We'll get to you in the next segment. This is the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. Back with more in a moment here from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Back on the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. Chris Brown in for John Murphy, along with Donald Jones. And we're going to get right back to the phones as the Macklin talk is getting hot and heavy here on Decision Day, or what is reportedly Decision Day for the free agent receiver. As promised, we lead off here with Mark in Lackawanna. Mark, what do you got for us here on this Macklin deal?
Yeah, some of the pros and cons on this. If he goes to Baltimore, yeah, he may be the star, but he's going to be seeing the number one defensive back day, week in and week out,
right.
Double coverages, hits, you know, extra hits on him. He comes to Buffalo, he won't be the number one. Well, he may be, but and he'll see a defensive back that maybe is a little not as well. And so productivity, it could go Buffalo's way, you know, instead of Baltimore, because who knows?
Yeah, that's an interesting point. What do you think of that, Donald? Better matchups with corners, playing the number two corner, not the number one corner.
He's definitely – you can look at it that way. I still just don't think players like him go into it thinking like that. I want to be the number one guy. I don't care who I'm faced against. If they're throwing me enough passes, I'm going to beat the number one guy, you know.
Right.
And I feel like I'm better than the number one corners out there in the league anyway. Like, this is just how players think, you know. We want to think of it that way, but a player like him, it's hard for him to say, okay, I've been a number one for the last couple of years, and now I'm going to go back to being a number two. Unless, you know, it can happen. You look at a guy like Brandon Marshall. Brandon Marshall's like, listen, I understand where I am in my career. I'm not a number one receiver anymore, and I can – be a number two or even a number three alongside Odell Beckham and Shepard out there. So he might have that type of mindset and come here. But I would think for a guy at 29, coming off of the contract he had, I would think that he still believes he can be a number one receiver.
Yeah. At the same time, you wonder, has he made his money and now
right.
he just wants, you know, the place where he can just enjoy the game the most? And maybe you can do that with better talent around you as an offense. Maybe that,
and your friends.
Maybe that goes into,
you know,
the thinking.
The connection side of things does come into play, because when you go to another, and, you know, fans don't understand this, but when you go to, if you've been in one place and then you go somewhere else, like, it's not just you. He's married now.
Mm-hmm.
So his wife has to now adjust to a new city, adjust to new people, which is probably going to be new wives throughout the team. Which you're like, I don't know any of these people, you know. But if you go somewhere where you have friends that are there, they can help you adjust to that city.
Mm-hmm.
They can – now your wife is now hanging out with their wives and things like that. And that
smoother.
Really goes in – it comes into play when you're making a decision like this. The money is huge. The you know, how many pass attempts, things like that is huge. But those connections and those friendships go a long way. It's hard to go somewhere where you totally just don't know anybody, because you feel like – I don't know anybody in this locker room. I'm just another guy here. Yeah.
Clarence in Buffalo. Clarence, you've not quite as optimistic about this. You're having some of the same fears as I am.
Right. How are you today?
Doing good.
Good, good. Hi, Donald. How are you today?
I'm good, man.
Good. I'm kind of pessimistic about this, because over the years, we've been having a lot of problems getting free agents with any name to come and sign here with Buffalo. And I think one of the problems has been with the organizations themselves. Our organization has been, quote-unquote, a loser, per se, where Baltimore and other agents, other places, have they've had winners. And I think maybe this might be one of the things that he may be also thinking about, is going to a possible winner. And with us having new people coming in, new personnel, new coaches and things of that sort, he might think this might be a beginning instead of where he can go to Baltimore and they're already established.
Well, I mean, I understand that. I don't think there's any debate, and Clarence, thanks for the call. I don't think there's any debate that Baltimore has been the more successful franchise on the field. There's no right. debating that. But I will say this. I looked at the record, the combined record of Buffalo and of Baltimore the last three seasons combined. So we're talking 48 games.
Mm-hmm.
The Ravens are 24-24, and the Bills are 25-23. So there's a 10-6 in there for Baltimore 3 years ago. But
they haven't been the same Baltimore team.
They are not.
They're not the same Baltimore
and
team.
Their defense had some turnover this year.
Yeah.
They're young, not as deep. And they got to play Pittsburgh twice. And
Cincinnati.
You know, Cincinnati is a good team, a beatable team, but a good team. And, you know, Cleveland's Cleveland.
Cleveland's Cleveland. Now, somebody tweeted me this, and I'll pose this to you. Zach Dowell said, Macklin to me could be another Percy Harvin. Bills need to be careful.
I don't know if I want to go that far. He certainly has an injury history. There's an ACL in his history. He has had groin problems earlier in his career. They did crop up again here this past season. So you've got to believe there's going to be a long physical mm-hmm. going on with whomever he signs
with. Yeah.
But, boy, I don't know if I'd
Percy Harvin.
He was.
And
stature-wise, he's just not put together the same way as Macklin. I think Macklin's kind of that wiry, strong. Speed-wise, they're similar. I think Macklin's put together a little bit better than Percy Harvin was. Percy's undersized, you know, jitterbug guy.
Right. Percy had the headaches and things that he dealt with.
Oh, yeah, the migraines, too.
Yeah, the migraines. Yeah. But he had other injuries, too. When you think of Percy Harvin's career, you think migraines, like you think, wow, talented player, fast, and then automatically you go to migraines and other injuries. You never really go to production. Like, you think of Jerry Macklin, you're like, yeah, this dude he's produced in this league. You know, you're talking about first thoughts. He's produced. He's been a solid number two. He's been a number one and produced in that role. He's been to a Pro Bowl. Nah, I think those are two totally different situations. I don't think I would compare those
two. Yeah, I don't think I would either. That's going to do it for us here in the first hour of the show. We'll be back on the other side. And joining us at that time will be a guy who's put together a couple of pieces, including one on Jeremy Macklin and why you shouldn't be surprised that he was released by the Chiefs. Mm. Interesting take there. We'll talk to Andy Benoit from Monday Morning Quarterback. Coming up on the other side here on the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts, here at One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Radio Network Sports Update.
Here's Sports Update from One Bills Drive. Free agent wide receiver Jeremy Macklin will reportedly make his decision on where to play in 2017 today. That, according to NFL Network's Ian Rapoport, Macklin visited with the Bills and Ravens last week, and it appears to be just a two-horse race for the receiver's services. Macklin would be an instant number one receiver in Baltimore and a likely number two behind Sammy Watkins if he were to decide to sign in Buffalo. Bills minicamp gets underway Tuesday. The mandatory practices run through Thursday this week before the players are off for about 5 weeks leading up to training camp at St. John Fisher. In other NFL news, former Bills safety Aaron Williams is scheduled to visit with the Houston Texans on Thursday. That, according to the Houston Chronicle, Williams, who also visited earlier this offseason with the Jacksonville Jaguars, reportedly has a clean bill of health. Williams' history of neck injuries had threatened to prematurely end his career. The Pittsburgh Penguins are Stanley Cup champs for a second straight year, going back-to-back after their Game 6 clinching victory over Nashville 2-0. It was the second straight shutout of the series for Matt Murray, Sidney Crosby, the Conn Smythe winner. The Pens are the first team to win back-to-back titles since the 97-98 Detroit Red Wings. Another champion could be crowned tonight in the NBA. The Golden State Warriors have a 3-1 series lead over the Cleveland Cavaliers. Game 5 is tonight at Oracle Arena in Oakland. The Cavs managed to stave off a sweep, winning Game 4. The Dubs are 15-1 this postseason. And the Bisons are off today. They begin a home series with Lehigh Valley on Tuesday. That is your sports update here on the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. I am Chris Brown, along with Donald Jones, filling in for Murph here today. And as promised, joining us here this hour, Monday morning quarterback contributor, NFL analyst on Sports Illustrated, Andy Benoit, who's had a couple of interesting articles this week that we had to talk to him about. Andy, thanks for joining us.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Doing okay.
Good.
So, obviously, as you can imagine, with this supposedly decision day on Jeremy Maclin on Buffalo or Baltimore, at least we think it's just a two-horse race unless there's some surprise candidate that we don't know about, you know, we were kind of drawn to, you know, your story on how Jeremy Maclin became expendable. Certainly was a surprise across the league to see him be a post-June 1st cut, especially seeing that he was participating in practices, which put the organization at a tremendous amount of risk.
And they said he looked good out there. I mean,
well, yeah, I mean, you would hope so, right? Coming off of a season where he didn't really perform all that well due to groin injuries that he tried to play through. But maybe just lay out for our listeners what even precipitated the idea to kind of pursue this after you saw the cut of Maclin by the Chiefs.
Well, I had the same question everybody else had, which was, why are they cutting him now? Why didn't they cut him back in March? And as I understand, and I had to get some help from some cap experts at overthecap.com and also Andrew Brand, who works with us at the MMQB, as I understand it, the reason they cut him when they did after June 1st was because the dead money that would have they would have incurred for cutting him back in March,
right,
instead of having to apply all that dead money into their 2017 cap, they were able to chop a bunch of it into the 2018 cap. So they took less of an immediate dead money hit, and that's why they felt it was justified to risk having him practice. Because, of course, if he'd gotten hurt, they would have owed him all $10 million of his salary this year. They needed to free up about $10 million. They didn't have enough money to sign their draft class, and they didn't have any rainy day cap savings, so to speak. And when you look at all of those contracts in Kansas City, the only, if they wanted to get that $10 million by getting rid of one guy rather than cutting two or three starters, which would have been their only other option, the only other contract that was in play for that would be Alex Smith. And obviously, they're not going to cut their veteran quarterback at this point. So
right,
the Maclin thing really was, in hindsight, it's actually surprising that none of us saw it coming. I thought Maclin was expendable given the way they play. I think he's an excellent player, but I don't think he's as valuable to Kansas City as he would be to another offense, especially like yours in Buffalo or Baltimore's. So nothing about it surprises me now that I know what all the reasoning was behind it. But, it wasn't one that anyone saw coming, but maybe we all should have.
Well, here's the one thing that's peculiar to me about it, because you can designate someone as a post-June 1st cut. And I have to believe that the Chiefs knew their fiscal situation before June 1st or May 30th or whenever they decided, you know, Maclin's going to have to be the guy we release here. So why not designate him a June 1st cutback then? And then you're not even running a risk of doing anything on the field with him and compromising any of that. Maybe they hadn't made that decision yet, but I was wondering why that might not have been an option, because you can designate post-June 1st cuts.
Yeah, Chris, that's a great point, and that's one I don't have the answer to that. That's a question I would take to Andrew Brandt again, and my guess is his answer would be that he doesn't have the answer either, but there is a reason. I'm sure Glenn Dorsey, the GM in Kansas City, didn't forget that you can designate a post-June cut. So there's something else has gone on. They did have some other guys moved. I mean, like off the top of my head, Jay Howard went to Chicago. He had been there, although I don't know if he was already gone at the early March or not. I don't know the answer to that. There is an answer. They didn't just do this willy-nilly, but we are now probably 7 or 8 layers deep in the nuances of the salary cap trying to figure out exactly what was behind it.
And now that I'm thinking more and more about it, the wheels are turning in my head, and I'm thinking, well, maybe they had a thought that at some point in round one, we're going to trade up and try to get a quarterback, and that's going to cost us more money. So maybe they knew they weren't going to pick at 27. There'd be more money they'd need in their rookie pool, but let's wait and see what happens. Maybe that was it.
Yeah, maybe. Now, you guys can tell me this. Was there any way that they could have come to him and, you know, back in February and said, listen, we need you to take a pay cut before?
Yeah, I suppose that could have been an option too.
Or they could have been negotiating all these months and saying, by June 1st, you've got to take a pay cut, and if you don't, we can't keep you. Now, what makes me wonder about that is Macklin seems surprised by the move, but that was, we're going off of just one tweet there, too. So it's possible that they were negotiating behind the scenes all along.
Right.
We don't know. I would love to know. I'm just so curious about it now because everyone keeps wondering still.
Yeah. I find it interesting, Andy, like your take on the whole thing went into, you know, the way Andy Reid has designed this offense. You know, obviously an offshoot of a lot of West Coast principles, but just how, and I don't think a lot of fans realize this, so hopefully you can dissect this a little bit better for them than I can, but just in the way that you talk about how number one receivers in this offense aren't necessarily or don't have to be true mismatch people, which most teams in the NFL seem to covet.
Well, yeah, so in most offenses, and your guys' in Buffalo is a great illustration, a lot of offenses run isolation type of routes, and Green Bay does it probably more than any team. The Bills do it a lot because it fits Tyrod Taylor's style. What we mean by isolation routes, or some people call them individual or independent routes, mm-hmm. It's basically receiver A, you go run your route and try to beat your defender. On the other side, receiver B, you run your route, try to beat your defender. Down the middle, receiver C, you do the same. Whichever one of you gets open, we're throwing the ball to. I mean, that's kind of the essence of it. That's how we all play football growing up. In the NFL, the other thing you see, though, is receivers A, his route is dependent on receiver B and receiver C, and they all work together and build off one another, and they attack a specific coverage. And when you get into that, those combination routes, then it's less about who's at what spot for your receivers and more about what is the coverage and what does the rule of the coverage say where the ball should go. So Alex Smith's job in Kansas City, because this is how they play, his job is to read the coverage. If he sees a certain coverage, he knows that his receiver is this guy on that play. If it's a different coverage, the ball goes to that guy. And it's all very much determined by how the action plays out. So you don't need a dominant number one receiver to play that way. I mean, will you take one? Yeah, absolutely. But you don't need one because the ball's getting determined where the ball goes, more determined by how the action plays out rather than by who's winning one-on-one. The Chiefs don't ask their receivers to all just go win one-on-one a whole bunch. That's not how they play. And by the way, when they do that, in the scenarios when they do have to win one-on-one, the guy that they build their plays around is Travis Kelce now. He's become a bona fide superstar receiver. And then the other guy's Tyreek Hill. They believe he'll be an every-down player for him this year. So those are their two matchup guys anyway, which means Macklin would have been third in their pecking order. So he's third in an offense that really doesn't even have much of a pecking order by its nature anyway.
So, Andy, if he was going to be third in their offense, I mean, is he a number one? At this point, 29 years old, coming off of the injury season he had last year, what is he, a 1A? Is he a solid number two receiver? What is he?
I think if we're just to generalize it across the league, I think Jeremy Macklin's a very high-quality number two, solid starting-type wide receiver. To me, Donald, a true number one, and you can probably attest to this, a true number one's a guy that you can put as an ex-ISO or put him by himself on the weak side of the formation and trust that he's going to impact the corner and the safety. You build your routes that way. Number ones take safeties no matter where they are and what side of the field. And I think there are probably only 12 to 13, 14 true number one receivers across the NFL. Then you get those second-tier guys that can draw safety help depending on the play design. But Jeremy Macklin, he's never been a guy. He's not a Dez Bryant or an A.J. Green where you just put him anywhere on the field and that dictates what the safety does. He doesn't dictate coverages that way.
Now, moving along to your other story, and, man, did you get some Twitter blowback on this one.
What?
the 15 backup quarterbacks better than Colin Kaepernick. Not 15 quarterbacks. The 15 backup quarterbacks better than Colin Kaepernick. Could you have anticipated the kind of response that you elicited from the social media universe with this?
No, not at all, because I'll tell you, I talked to dozens and dozens, probably hundreds of coaches a year in the NFL, and I can't name one off the top of my head that if we had this discussion, the discussion would last much longer than 45 seconds. Absolutely nobody in the NFL that I know would think anything differently of Kaepernick other than, yeah, he's a middle-tier backup quarterback. And that's what you say when you say there's 15 guys better than him. And a lot of people wanted to know, well, tell us why Chad Henne exactly is better than Kaepernick, or why exactly is take any old bat, I mean, take whatever one, Cody Kessler, whoever you want. And the reason why, it's the same for all those guys. In the NFL, and especially if you're going to be a backup where they're going to just plug you in and hope to keep the offense afloat, it's vital that you be able to play consistently from the pocket. And that's what I mean, that stylistically. I don't mean you have to be Andrew Luck from the pocket or Tom Brady from the pocket, but you have to be willing to play there. You have to be willing to drop back, stay in the pocket, operate on time, and stay within the structure of the offense. And that's not Kaepernick's game. He's not a structured quarterback at all. He breaks himself down in the pocket and moves out of it and doesn't make throws within the timing of the play from the pocket. That's just the way he's always been. And guys like that tend to be erratic, and that's why Kaepernick's gotten more erratic each year of his career. The more defenses see him, the easier he becomes to defend because he doesn't do anything conventionally. So the play designs don't really win for Kaepernick because he doesn't follow the play designs. And it's extremely difficult to play with that. So I would be shocked if any coach in the league, more than three or four coaches in the league, wouldn't agree with the assessment that there are 15 better backups. By what you need from a backup, there are 15 better options than Kaepernick. And really, you could argue, guys, that all 32 teams agree with that because to this day, Kaepernick still remains unsigned.
Right. And here's the disconnect for maybe some NFL fans that are blowing you up on
they
Twitter.
They look at the numbers.
Well,
right?
I don't think they're even looking at the numbers. I think they're looking at pure athletic talent.
Right.
And from an athletic talent standpoint, he's probably better than most of these backups. But in terms of the position, requirements of playing quarterback, it's a completely different animal. And I think that's where the disconnect is here. I don't know if you feel the same way, Andy, but I think a lot of people see him running around and, you know, he ran for a 90-yard touchdown in the 2015 season, which was a broken play, but still in all, there aren't many quarterbacks in the league that can outrun a secondary for a 90-yard touchdown.
Right, exactly.
And I think people see that and they say, wow, how can you say Matt Castle's better than him? Matt Castle, you got to be kidding me.
And as a receiver, I can say this, and this will go to your point, Andy. If I'm a receiver and our starting quarterback goes down, the backup comes in, I don't want to now have to shift the way I think in terms of my route running because I know you're going to run around. And so now I have to run around with you. I still want to be able to play within the offense, you know, that I'm used to playing in. And so, yeah, Andy, I definitely see your point there.
Yeah, because I appreciate that, Don. I mean, I agree with everything you guys have said. And I think I would argue Kaepernick's a better athlete than probably all but four or five starting quarterbacks in the NFL. Mm-hmm. There's no arguing with the raw talent. And even his arm, when he makes the throw, when he's correct, which isn't often enough, he needs to be more accurate. But when he's on, his arm looks as good as anyone's too. But what Donald said, so let's say you're a receiver, you're Donald Jones, you've been playing, you've been practicing all year round, taking rep after rep after rep, and everything's working on time. You finally learn the nature of the offense. You have all these different places you line up, all these different coverage reads, and a quarter of an inch here, a half a centimeter there, and that's the difference between a catch and no catch, and you've learned that. Now we get to October, and the quarterback goes down, and they put in a new guy. Everything that you practice becomes irrelevant because the new guy doesn't come close to playing on time. Absolutely no sense of timing at all. It's a willy-nilly randomized football. Well, now Donald Jones is a worse receiver, and all that practicing goes out the window, and so does everybody else's, and the offensive line has the same issues. And the coaches are wondering, how do we draw plays? Because not only do we have a quarterback who we don't know where he'll be, but everyone else we've coached around that guy, we don't know what to tell them either. So, it's not like these can be answered, but nobody wants to answer that. That's very hard to do. And so if you're a coach right now and you're looking off into the future, you're thinking, do we want to deal with all of that scenario or do we want to just take a backup who's got a little bit less talent, but we know at least we wouldn't have to redo everything and reteach all the Donald Joneses on the team. That's what teams are looking at right now. And they're saying Kaepernick's not worth the trouble because, it really, he's a guy, if he's not your starter, there's no point in having him on the team. because his style of play is so unique and so unconventional that unless everyone's practicing with him all the time, it's not going to work to just insert him into the game.
Yeah, it's totally a functionality principle here,
right,
more than anything else. I don't think there's any question about that. The question now is, though, is there any kind of scenario that you can – and we're talking to Andy Benoit from Monday Morning Quarterback contributor and NFL analyst on Sports Illustrated about a couple articles he wrote in the past week, the latest, the 15 backup quarterbacks better than Colin Kaepernick. Can you envision any scenario, Andy, where Kaepernick finds his way back into the league? Would there just have to be a tremendous shortage of quarterbacks, seven go down with injuries in training camp? Like, what has to happen here?
I would have thought Seattle was that place when he was in, you know, when he went in on a visit. If there was a place where he could go and fit into an offense, it would have been Seattle. I mean, Russell Wilson runs around. He throws. Now, he's gotten a lot better at throwing from the pocket.
Yeah.
But those guys at least know that when the play breaks down, I got to run with the quarterback.
He was the highest rated passer in the league a couple of years ago.
Right. You know, so that didn't work out. So now you do have to think to yourself, man, do you see that scenario? So, Andy, do you even see that scenario?
Well, I'm with you. I thought Seattle was the spot. In fact, I thought that would have been a good fit for everyone, and Seattle should have signed him. My guess is they didn't, because you get all this talk about Russell Wilson's place in the locker room, and last thing we need is a high-profile guy to pour gasoline onto that fire. Whether the fire is real or not, parts of it exist because the players would still be answering questions about it. It's outside chatter that leaks in. So Seattle didn't want to deal with that, and that's, I mean, so let's look at, well, which teams have mobile quarterbacks and they play to that quarterback's mobility. And like even your guys in Buffalo with Tyrod Taylor, who stylistically, I think he's a better quarterback than Kaepernick, but stylistically they have some similarities. But even Buffalo doesn't tailor their offense to Taylor, no pun intended there. They're not doing moving pockets with him. They're not really a mobile quarterback type of offense. But to me, that's Kaepernick's best chance. I mean, some people might say, well, what about Cam Newton? That's not a mobile quarterbacking offense. Newton runs a lot, but that's their running game. We're talking about their passing game. So teams that accompany or accommodate a mobile quarterback, I guess, would have a window there. The other complicating factor, though, guys, is Kaepernick's not a very good on-the-move thrower, which is a problem when you move as much as he does. So it's like Denver under the Gary Kubiak years where they did all these play-action rollouts and half-field reads. That would work, except Kaepernick's not the accurate passer for that. So I'm not saying he won't be in the NFL. He's talented. But I don't know which team it will be. There's no team that I can see wanting him based on that team's style of play right now.
All right, Andy. Listen, thanks very much for the time, as always. We know you're a frequent appearance. You know, you're frequently on the show. Yeah, and so we do appreciate the time. I know you're probably disappointed Murph couldn't be here to talk to you, but in any event, we thank you very much for the time and kind of shedding some light on some of this stuff for us.
Well, I appreciate you guys having me.
All right, Andy, thanks very much again. And that's Andy Benoit, Monday Morning Quarterback, contributor, NFL analyst for Sports Illustrated, helping us out with a couple of pieces he wrote in the last week here, how Jeremy Maclin became expendable, and 15 backup quarterbacks better than Colin Kaepernick. And I got to say this, Donald. This Kaepernick situation, as Andy's describing it, do you know the first person I thought of? J.P. Losman.
Because now he's a coach?
Not conventional.
Mm-hmm.
Runs around. Didn't really stick to the principles of the offensive responsibilities. And had trouble executing.
Yeah.
And eventually washed out of the league.
I think about basically all of the guys that got drafted in the first round this year. I mean, they come from not conventional NFL style of offenses.
Yeah.
Pat Mahomes runs around and just throws the ball as deep as he can throw it. I mean, that's basically what he did down in Texas Tech. So we'll see how that works out for him. You look at Deshaun Watson, ran around a little bit, wasn't accurate really that much. I mean, you look at a lot of those catches that those guys had, they were all over the place. You know, he just had receivers that would come down with it. So you have so many of these quarterbacks coming into the game now just because in college it's so effective to have a quarterback that can run around and throw the football because the field is so spread wide open down there. It's just like a lot more room for them to do that. But once you get here, you have to be able to play within the pocket. It is a great thing to have legs and be able to get outside the pocket and make plays. but for the most part, you need to be able to play within the pocket and remain within the play that is called.
Yeah.
You know, and Kaepernick has not been able to do that. And the fact of the matter is, I remember talking to Stevie when Stevie was in San Francisco after Kaepernick got paid, and they went to like four receiver sets, which was totally different than what they had been doing the years that they were in the NFC Championship and in the Super Bowl, when they were usually, you know, two or three running backs or two running backs, two receivers, traditional sets. You start spreading the ball out, that is not his game. Like, he's just not that passing quarterback, you know. And so it really exposed him as a throwing quarterback. And so you have that reason amongst other reasons why he hasn't been signed yet. And we all know those.
803-0550. Rick in Denver, hang tight. We got to take a break. But back on the other side, we'll have time to talk to you more about Macklin and anything else on your mind. Here on the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. From One Bills Drive, this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Chris Brown in for John Murphy here on the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts, alongside Donald Jones here at One Bills Drive, as we dissect the Jeremy Macklin decision day, 2017. We got to get a sounder for that, something
we
like
should.
A Law and Order,
yeah.
Dump, dump, you know, something like that. That would be good. Rick in Denver, hang tight. We'll get to you in one quick second, because we've got to address this. This is breaking news, okay? There was a guy in the NFL.
We got a guy.
That had to weigh in at less than 250 pounds for an incentive in his contract, and he has done it. Ladies and gentlemen, Seattle Seahawks running back Eddie Lacy has checked in at under 250 pounds. He will receive $55,000 for accomplishing that. Why can't we get a gig like this?
What? I mean, I wish when I was a player I could do something like this. You know, I was never close to being above the weight that I needed to be. But, shoot, if they would have said, listen, we need you 10 pounds less, and we'll give
done.
You fit. All right, I'll do it. I'll go on a crazy diet and do it. I don't care. Like, so, this is crazy.
This is how crazy it is. The payoff is part of a seven-tiered incentive structure to keep him at a healthy playing weight this year. If he meets all the benchmarks, Lacy will earn $385,000 in weight maintenance incentives on top of his $2.8 million salary this year.
Then this is throughout the entire season, or is this just offseason?
Oh, they'll be weighing him a lot.
I know they'll weigh him during the season, but these incentives, is that just during the offseason, or is that the season as well?
Well, I'd be inclined to think it's going from the day he signed and periodically through the course of now to
the end of the regular season. That's crazy.
Because I think he proved in Green Bay he could not keep his weight under
control.
He couldn't
keep his weight. They need to do this more. Instead of finding guys, put this in their contract.
Yeah.
You know, and guys that make sure they stand up. Look, I can make an extra $55,000 if I make this weight. You know, instead of, you'll be fined $10,000 if you don't make the weight.
We'll have a little fun with this in a little bit here, because ESPN.com put together a funny thing on how Eddie Lacy's clause isn't one of the craziest incentives that we've seen in player contracts in the world of pro sports before. We'll get into some of the other ones in a little bit here, because some of them are pretty ridiculous when you think about it. But let's go back to the phones at 803-0550 as we are talking Jeremy Macklin, the decision he's got to make, where the best fit is and why. And we go to Rick in Denver for some insight on that. Rick, what do you have for us?
Hey, guys, before I get to the Macklin take, you know, as far as Kaepernick's concerned, the bigger issue with Kaepernick is that his perception is that he's a starting quarterback.
Right.
And reality is that he's a mid-range backup. And Pete Carroll made a really interesting comment when he went to visit Seattle. He said, we already have a starter. I mean, I think that was a comment, you know, basically showing that Kaepernick wants big money. And it pisses me off when people like Mike Fiorio, you know, come out and make this a political issue. It has nothing to do with politics or what he did. It has everything to do with his ability and his perception of, you know, what he thinks he should be paid. That's the reason why he hasn't been signed. Now, as far as Macklin is concerned, you know, Chris, I disagree. I think Buffalo is a better spot for him, because if Sammy Watkins goes off and stays healthy, he's going to draw, you know, defensive coverage rotations. They're going to bracket him. it's going to leave Macklin one-on-one, and he's going to be extremely productive. That's best-case scenario. Worst-case scenario, Sammy gets hurt, and he's thrown into the number one role. Chances are Bean is not going to go ahead and pay him what he thinks he needs to be paid because he can't stay healthy. And then Macklin has a big payday as a number one, possibly, if he produces and gets his big payday that way. So, I hope he signs with the Bills. And personally, because I am a Bills fan, that this is the best spot for him.
Yeah, and I appreciate the call, Rick. And you're not the first guy to say more favorable matchups, you know, in terms of cornerbacks you're facing every week, where the attention is going. And I'm not going to debate for a second that he will get more favorable matchups here in Buffalo. But I think we've seen that, at least I have, I've seen this, the decision-making happen this way too many times, especially with receivers that are trying to find new destinations. If they have a choice, 9 times out of 10, maybe 9.5 times out of 10, they choose the place where they feel they're going to get more opportunities with the ball in their hands. And if you're the number one option in an offense that threw it 42-plus times per game last year, and you're the number one guy, and the guy that was the number one guy last year isn't there anymore in right. Dennis Pitta, I think he's – I just think he would see that as a better opportunity if we're talking one-year deal and he's got to produce this year and you know, cash in next year.
I mean, we all would like to think, man, all right, if he comes to Buffalo
– be great. I mean, we all want it to happen.
If he comes to Buffalo, he can be, you know, the number two receiver or 1A or whatever it is, and he'll have more favorable matchups. We like to think that because Sammy would be on the field too. But just look at the reality of the situation. You're talking about a guy who was a number one option in – well, he was, I guess, technically the number one receiver in Kansas City – where, you know, one of his buddies, Andy Reid, came to his wedding a couple weeks ago, and then is, you know, they release him. You're talking about a guy who just got released.
Yeah.
If you're a receiver like Jeremy Macklin, and I just got released, I have a chip on my shoulder. I want to go to a place where I can catch passes and show and prove that you should not have released me because I am still a number one receiver. You should have figured out another way to make that happen. And then you decided to release me in June, which made things even worse. You know, so, yeah, you have to think about that mentality side of things. Like
the anger
these guys
side?
Play, yes. These guys play with chips on their shoulder, and they look for anything to add more to, you know what, that's another chip on my shoulder.
Yeah.
I understand I was hurt last year, but if you wanted to release me, do it in March where I have a bunch of teams to choose from. Don't release me in June. Just like David Harris said, don't release me in June. What is that?
Right. Or at least designate me beforehand
right.
so I know what I'm going to be looking at and my agent can get to work on things and – that type of stuff, but, yeah, not in the cards. Let's go back to the phones, 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550 to jump in on the conversation. We go to Steve in Kenmore. Steve, what do you have for us on the Macklin stuff?
Yeah, I actually got a question because you guys are the professionals, and my question to you is this. If we do sign Macklin to a one-year contract and Watkins has a chip on his shoulder because we didn't pick his fifth-year option.
Right.
So they have both have a good season. They end up leaving because, obviously, they're able to. And we're going to get stuck with Zay Jones as our number one. I mean, it seems like we're not starting over. So I'll hang up and let you tell me.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't worry about that, Steve, because you have the franchise tag. They can leave, but not if they're franchised.
Right.
You know, so I wouldn't – let's just say – I mean, we're getting into a lot – we're getting down the rabbit hole pretty far right now, but –
we can't get back up out of this rabbit hole.
Let's follow Steve's line of thought here. And both players are on the Bills roster. Both have good seasons. I mean, I like where we're going with this.
Oh, yeah.
And it would certainly be a good problem to have. But I think in that scenario, and I'm going to assume that Sammy's numbers are better than Macklin's, you know, just by virtue of where the ball's going, I would be inclined to think if they can't get a long-term deal done leading up to free agency, they franchise him.
Right.
And then go from there. What they do with Macklin, I think, is going to be dependent upon a lot of factors.
Mm-hmm.
One, the amount of money being committed to Sammy. Two, in their fiscal structure, how much money are they willing to commit to the wide receiver position?
Mm-hmm.
Because now you're talking about two high-priced players if they both perform and have big years. And three,
who you got?
What has Zay Jones done as a rookie? What has somebody else maybe at the receiver position done, mm-hmm. and are they capable of stepping up into that role
right.
that Macklin occupied in 2017? These are all things that will be much easier to answer when they all happen, yeah. if they all happen. But I think those are the things at play.
If they both blow up and have great seasons, which is something Bills fans would love, and Tyrod Taylor would love, I don't know if I can even see a scenario where next year you can bring them both back.
Yeah, I don't either.
I don't think – I mean, you're talking about a lot of money going into one position and a run-first offense. You know, you're just talking right. about a lot of money going into one position. You would have to clip other guys, which I would think – I mean, it's going to happen anyway because it's just the nature of the beast. But you would really have to clip other guys, approach guys about taking pay cuts so that you can pay these two high-priced receivers. I just don't see that happening.
Yeah, and if you were a team that was throwing it 42 times a game, maybe that's,
maybe, yeah.
you know, or you're a Green Bay, maybe you're investing more money in the receiver right. position because that enhances Aaron Rodgers' value on the football field. But mm-hmm. here, where the approach is in stark contrast to that, I don't think outside of your number one, you're paying a boatload of money mm-hmm. at that position. You know, and it's not unlike other positions that we've seen the Bills make a conscientious decision about what our investment level will be. Right? When Jarris Byrd was a free agent and wanted $8 million a year, you know, good luck, Jarris. I hope you get it. And sure enough, he did because yeah. another team valued the safety position far higher than the Bills ever did. Mm-hmm. Bills let Andy Levitre go because they didn't want to overpay at the guard position. They wanted to invest money in tackle, and they did that with Cordy Glenn. So, you know, you have your priorities set position-wise as to where your cap dollars are going to be prioritized. Mm-hmm. And there's a trickle-down effect to that. And so you can only spend so much at maybe those positions you've got lower on that very list. And that's why
I would think, to be honest, you're hoping that Zay Jones in year two can step in and be your number two
receiver.
I would
agree with that.
Yeah.
I would agree with that. And I don't think that's unrealistic based right. on what we've seen to this point. Granted, we got to get the pads on and mm-hmm. see how he does on Sundays in his rookie year. But I think if he comes along like they expect him to, he might very well be ready to do just that, you know, come 2018.
Right.
After he's got a year under his belt. There's just a presence about that kid out there.
He's been trained well.
Yeah, his dad was a pro. He's been around that kind of environment. His older brother's in the league. Mm-hmm. Caleb, who's with the Vikings, he's also a receiver. You know, so there's a lot of valuable input that he can get and knowledge that maybe most rookies don't. But he just seems mature beyond his years, carries himself with a lot of confidence, and we'll be talking to him next hour on the show here. So we look forward to that because I certainly think he's going to contribute maybe even more than some people anticipate this season to the Bills passing game, provided they're passing enough to give everybody an opportunity. And if Macklin's here, logic would say there will be less of an opportunity for a guy like Zay Jones on the field, you would think.
I would think so. I mean, you're talking about Zay Jones now going and being primarily, I guess, a slot receiver as your number three.
Right.
You know, unless.
Which he's familiar with playing because that's where he predominantly played at East Carolina his first 3 years mm-hmm. before they moved him all over the place last year.
And listen, if you can put him in the slot, you have Macklin and Sammy on the outside, that's enough firepower for Tyrod Taylor to have a productive season.
All right, we've got to get into this, the offshoot of the Eddie Lacy thing. Eddie Lacy made weight today. He was under 250 and got a check for $55,000 for doing that for the Seattle Seahawks.
Yeah.
He's got some incentives about maintaining his weight in his contract. Could earn up to an additional $385,000 if he makes weight all year between now and, you know, the end of the regular season, which would go on top of his $2.8 million salary with the Seahawks. So ESPN.com kind of put together a fun thing, just some of the craziest incentives in sports history. And I don't know if you went through this whole thing
I went through a couple of them.
The craziest one for me is this guy in the English Premier League, this soccer player, Stefan Schwartz. And the incentive was, well, you'll get paid your contract unless you decide to launch into space. And I see that sub-headline, and I'm like, what the heck is this about? So I'll lay it out for you. 1999, this guy Schwartz signs with Sunderland, team in the English Premier mm-hmm. League for soccer. Before signing the four-year deal, the club makes a demand. And the way it was written in the contract was, no explorations of strange new worlds. So I guess they had found out that one of Schwartz's advisors had purchased tickets on a commercial spacecraft that was projected to launch. I'm not making this up. Projected to launch in 2002. So the franchise was worried
he was going to have
one of the tickets and be launched into space.
We're going to the moon, baby. Forget soccer.
And so this is the best part of the whole thing, though. Seriously. And this is how professional teams think, right? You know legal got involved when you hear okay? I can't even say it. The club knew that standard contract insurance wouldn't cover any injuries or death, because you never know what's going to happen in space, if he went in space.
If he left Earth.
Insurance doesn't cover outer space. That was the hang-up. Isn't that great? Oh, my God, I love that.
If you leave this Earth, insurance won't cover you.
No word if the compromise was a free two-week stay in a planetarium.
Is that like when you're filling out papers for health insurance, whatever, have you ever seen that in your insurance?
I can't say that I have.
Like your car insurance will cover you for everything unless you drive into outer space.
Yeah, because they know and I know that I don't have the money to launch myself into outer space by any way, shape, or form. This one threw me. Michael Jordan.
I saw that
one. Did you see that?
I saw that one. Yeah.
This is granted before he won any championships, but he was still gigantic.
He was
in 1988. They took all restrictions out of his contract.
And they called this for the love of the game.
You want to play basketball anywhere. You know, you want to go to Rucker Park in New York City.
That's crazy.
You want to go, you know, I don't care where you go. I don't care who you're playing against. You can play basketball anywhere you want. I think we all knew how competitive he was, and he would try to find any kind of game to get in.
Mm-hmm.
Not that there were too many people that were better than him, but unsanctioned athletic endeavors is like taboo.
Right.
For pro
you don't do
teams.
That. You just don't do – like, you understand when you come into this, for the most part, you know, if I get hurt playing basketball in a pickup game at LA Fitness, there's going to be an issue.
Yeah.
You know, but Michael Jordan was allowed to do that, and he was their star player. Like – they might as well say, you know what, you could go ahead and ride motorcycles.
See, now it's interesting you say that, because what did I write right here? No motorcycles. That's the one I see maybe more than anything.
Yeah.
I know Jared Allen, the pass rusher for the Vikings and the Chiefs, he was a big motorcycle rider, and they said no. And then I think I read, because he's also like, you know, an outdoorsman and stuff, likes riding horses. They let him ride horses, but not motorcycles. So I don't know how legal or insurance determined one was less dangerous than the other. Because you get thrown from a horse. You can get messed up.
You get on a horse that has a bad day. he had a bad day.
Horse with a bad day.
And he just throws you off.
Yeah. Can't you see Jared Allen? Cowboy hat, you know, down around his belt, holding it with two hands. Yeah, coach, I'm sorry.
Right.
My horse just had a bad day. And I can't play for eight games.
Did Roethlisberger have anything? Because you remember he got in that motorcycle accident. Did anything happen to him in Pittsburgh?
Boy. If it did, it wasn't serious. But there's a lot of good stuff in here. So if you have a chance, you should check it out on ESPN.com. We may get a new couple on the other side of the break here. But we do have to step aside momentarily here on the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. But more Macklin talk. Maybe we'll get into a little bit more of Eric Decker and whether he'd even be of interest should the Bills lose out on the Macklin sweepstakes. And there's some more incentives in here that would blow your mind, including one from Diana Taurasi, WNBA.
That
was crazy. We'll talk about that one also, along with a couple of new Olympic events for the 2020 Games in Tokyo.
Yeah.
What the heck is happening to the Olympics? I am not happy. We'll talk about that on the other side. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Chris Brown here on the John Murphy Show, filling in for Murph, presented by Napa Auto Parts, along with Donald Jones, as we're slowly and steadily putting a cap on the second hour of the program. Don't forget, coming up next hour, we will have Zay Jones here in studio in the next segment at some point in time, once he gets done with his duties here at One Bills Drive. And later on in the hour, we'll have Mary Wilson as a She tells us some of the questions she was asked about some of the top memorable moments in franchise history as the television series gets started tonight on MSG at 9 o'clock here in Western New York, part of a video series taking place on consecutive Mondays through the course of the summer here, with the exception of the July 4th week. Really some nice stuff that the guys in our video department put together at BuffaloBills.com and Buffalo Bills Entertainment. So we're looking forward.
Those guys are in the room with you.
Yeah, and they are cranking it right now.
So if you can give them a guy, let's just say a Mike Adamack, a crazy incentive.
Well, it would involve adult beverages, I think. That would probably work.
All right.
That would probably work pretty well.
That would work for him.
We were talking in the last segment about Eddie Lacy making weight under 250 today for the Seahawks. Got a $55,000 check for doing that. You want to talk about the best diet plan in the country? That'd work for a lot of people.
Yeah.
They might spring right back up to where they were, you know, a month or two later, but hey, they'd get down to a target weight for sure for 55 mm-hmm. grand. But we're looking at other fun incentives in contracts, and I mentioned Diana Taurasi, the WNBA player. So I think she's widely known as one of the best professional women's basketball players ever. Mm-hmm. So she gets this offer from a Russian team. You sign with us, and if you skip the upcoming season in the WNBA, we'll give you an extra 200 grand on top of what you're already going to pay, or what we're already going to pay you. And she did it. She left for a year because the Phoenix Mercury were only paying her 110 grand a season. So she doubled her money and then some just to play 1 year in Russia.
Yeah. And she came back?
She did come back. But
I'm taking that deal.
I mean, it's got to be pretty sweet to go spend a year in Russia, but.
Yeah, I'll do that.
I'd do it.
Year. What? Double. I mean, you know, football doesn't have that, but basketball players probably get offers like that as well. You know, you have some guys that are not starters per se. They can go into a league in China where, you know, they'll throw them some money. Come over here for a year.
Yeah. I like this one that two agents for the former quarterback, Rick Meyer, who did not have
a, I didn't see that one.
He did not have a great pro career, as we know. He was a great quarterback at Notre Dame. So he's the number two pick in the 93 draft. Mm-hmm. That was after Bledsoe, right? Yeah, after Bledsoe. So he enters the NFL at the start, you know, of what was known as the salary cap era. So tons of uncertainty about the cap's mechanics and impact because it hadn't happened yet. It's completely uncharted territory. So to try to cover themselves, his two agents decide to structure language in the contract that says the terms would, quote, survive and remain effective from the date of execution of this contract up to and including the end of the world. So basically guaranteeing the contract. I mean, essentially, that's what they were doing.
So this is their contract between the agent and the player, or his contract with the club?
With the club.
Wow.
It was like one of the first completely guaranteed contracts.
Yeah.
And he flamed. He flamed out.
He got his money guaranteed.
And then it became harder for everybody else in the league to get any portion of their contract guaranteed.
That's
thanks, Rick.
Thanks, Rick.
Thanks a lot.
What's he doing now, you know? Mm-hmm. Still living off his guarantees?
Doing some broadcasting or something, or something or other. Now, we all know in Major League Baseball that for a lot of teams, facial hair is a no-no. It's like written into their contracts, no facial hair. I know the Yankees do that. I believe the Reds do it. It went the other direction for Raleigh Fingers. So for young fans that may not know, but Raleigh Fingers was the guy with the handlebar mustache, mm-hmm. relief pitcher, 70s, 80s, played mostly for the A's, is most known for his time with the A's. So the A's owner got mad. This is pre-mustache for Raleigh Fingers. So he's on the roster. Reggie Jackson shows up to camp with a mustache, and the owner, Charlie Finley, goes nuts. So instead of forcing – so he comes up with a unique idea. Instead of forcing Reggie Jackson to shave the mustache, he decides he's going to have mustache night. So he offers all of his teammates, all of Reggie Jackson's teammates, $300 each to grow one, which in the 70s, I mean, even for baseball players, that's a pretty good amount to grow a mustache. I mean, you know, how much work is that? Just mm-hmm. sit and watch it go. It's like a chia pet. So Raleigh Fingers is only 26, so he takes him up on the offer and then decides to go all handlebar on it and really go all out. Well, Finley likes the idea so much, he agrees to contractually provide him with $100 of mustache wax so he can keep spinning him on the ends. And then the ironic thing is, he grew to like his mustache so much it became such an identifier to him that when he was a free agent, he was going to go sign with the Reds, but the Reds have a no mustache policy. So he retired. Said, forget it.
I'm not doing it. I can't cut my mustache.
Crazy.
I mean, I can't keep my mustache. I'm retiring.
So there's a ton of fun ones like that. But we got a break for top of the hour. We'll be back with you on the other side. Don't forget, we got Zay Jones coming your way here in studio in the next segment. And Mary Wilson coming up at the bottom of the hour as she helps us with the top 10 most memorable moments in Bills history. Here on the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive, this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Radio Network Sports Update.
Free agent wide receiver Jeremy Maclin will reportedly make his decision on where to play in 2017 today. That, according to NFL Network's Ian Rapoport, Maclin visited with the Bills and Ravens last week, and it appears to be just a two-horse race for the receiver's services. Maclin would be an instant number one receiver in Baltimore and a likely number two behind Sammy Watkins here in Buffalo. Bills minicamp gets underway Tuesday. The mandatory practices run through Thursday this week before the players are off for about 5 weeks leading up to training camp at St. John Fisher. In other NFL news, former Bills safety Aaron Williams is scheduled to visit with the Houston Texans on Thursday. That, according to the Houston Chronicle, Williams, who also visited earlier this offseason with the Jacksonville Jaguars, reportedly has a clean bill of health. Williams' history of neck injuries had threatened to prematurely end his career. Pittsburgh Penguins are Stanley Cup champs for a second straight year, going back-to-back after their Game 6 clinching victory over Nashville 2-0. It was the second straight shutout of the series for Matt Murray, Sidney Crosby, the Conn Smythe winner. The Pens are the first team to win back-to-back titles since the 97-98 Detroit Red Wings. Another champion could be crowned tonight in the NBA. Golden State Warriors have a 3-1 series lead over the Cleveland Cavaliers. Game 5 tonight at Oracle Arena in Oakland. The Cavs managed to stave off a sweep, winning Game 4. The Dubs are 15-1 this postseason. And the Bisons are off today, but they begin a homestand with Lehigh Valley. That starts on Tuesday. And that's your sports update here on the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts, as we enter our final hour together. Chris Brown along with Donald Jones filling in for Murph today. And we've been knocking Maclin all around, you know, all day, knowing it's supposed to be the day he makes a decision as to where he will sign. I don't think that necessarily means that the signing will happen today. We may hear of the decision. We may not. He may make a decision and disclose it to the team, but it may not, may or may not get out, whichever team he decides to go with. And a lot of people are waiting for this shoe to drop, knowing that the next player that will be in pursuit will be Eric Decker. And still on the Jets roster right now, they're trying to trade him. I can't believe too many teams are going to try to give something to the Jets for a 30-year-old receiver coming off shoulder surgery who's probably just going to be released anyway.
Right.
So in all likelihood, that's a guy who will be out on the market, after this first shoe drops with Maclin.
And, you know, I said this to you earlier. I mean, what are you willing to give up for Decker? Nothing. You know, are you talking about a 5 and a 6 or something?
No. I'm not giving anything.
Exactly.
So you may as well cut him. So
you might as well cut him. I would doubt that any team would give up anything for Decker right now. If they give us something, right, you're talking about a 6th or 7th round pick, and that's pretty much it that you would give up. And then you still have to restructure his deal because he's, you know, he has a sizable contract up there.
He does.
Down there in New York. So I'm sure any team that brings him in is like, listen, you can come here, we'll trade for you, but you know, you're going to have to take a pay cut.
And you know, you can't deny his productivity. You know, for the last 5 years, 74 catches or more, mm-hmm. three of those 4 seasons in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a 1,000-yard season, a 1,200-yard season, another 1,000-yard season. He's got 3 double-digit touchdown seasons mm-hmm. in those 4 years. And we're talking 2012, 2013, 2014, and 2015.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so in 2015 with the Jets, 80 catches, 1,000 yards, 12 touchdowns.
I mean, even in 2014, he had 962, so he was right on that.
He was right there, yeah. Yeah,
right on that 1,000.
Last year, of course, only plays in three games, has the injuries, has to undergo surgery. So it's a situation that's really not unlike Macklin all that much, a guy who has largely been a number two for his entire career, but can make plays and obviously has a size advantage on a lot of DBs. Can go up and get the football, runs pretty good routes for a big man, is good at boxing out people. Earlier in his career, played slot, showed an ability to play there, played more on the outside for the Jets.
I think, you know, our
what
next,
is he?
What is he, right? I think our next guest can do, and we'll see, he's a rookie, but I think he can do, or he'll be asked to do, what Eric Decker does.
Okay.
You know, and that's play in the slot, especially if you were to sign Macklin, play in the slot, or even if you don't sign Macklin and you just have Sammy, and let's just say he's your number two, Zay ends up your number two, run right. A lot of things underneath, you know, where Sammy's the guy that goes, takes the top off the defense, and Zay is more of your possession type of receiver. That's how I look at Decker. He's a possession receiver who can work underneath stuff. He can score touchdowns for you. He knows how to position himself. He knows how to play the game that way. But if you want another guy on the outside that has that explosiveness, mm-hmm. I mean, that's what Jeremy Macklin is, you know. And if you want to have two guys running up the sidelines, then you would rather have Jeremy
Macklin. I don't think there's any debate that if you have Macklin and Watkins, you're far more explosive than if you had Watkins and Decker. No question about that. Now, Zay did run in the 4.4s mm-hmm. at the combine. I think it was 4.46, 4.44, somewhere. We'll have to ask him when he gets in here, but – I remember he ran a pretty good time, and he doesn't – you know how some people say, well, the guy plays
slower.
Plays faster than he times?
Mm-hmm.
I think Zay almost looks the opposite of that because I think it's just the way his stride is. It doesn't look like he's making up a lot of ground, and then all of a sudden, you know, he's behind a defender or he's getting separation. So I don't think the speed is as readily apparent to the naked eye,
mm-hmm.
but when you put him on the watch, you're like, oh – this guy can run.
Because
his time surprised me when we were at the combine and they put it up. I was like, oh, wow, that's great. I mean, that only adds, you know, to the portfolio for him on the evaluation. So
Zay is just an unknown because he's a rookie, you know. So
right.
You just don't know. Like, when he gets out there in the field, he might be savvy enough to just get by guys. You know, he really – and we know he's been trained well throughout his life because he's been around it so much. He might be that savvy. We'll see once he gets the pads on and we can really see him run some routes against guys and one-on-ones and then in a team type of situation. Jeremy Macklin, to me, just makes your offense explosive, you know, and teams will have to respect that. If you have he and Sammy on the field together and they're healthy, teams have to respect those two guys. You
right.
can't just say we're going to put everybody up in the box and stop your run game, because if you have those two – Tyrod Taylor is going to throw the ball down the field. Like, and both of those guys are on the field.
Right.
He's going to throw it. And so when you threaten teams like that, they have to make sure we have people back deep to cover. And now it opens things up for your run game.
And that's why I've said that if they can land Macklin, it's probably the best 1-2 combination since Moulds and Peerless Price.
Mm-hmm.
Two guys that could both run, make plays deep down the field, but also run routes. And – you know, you think about what they did, and I'm sure there's enough fans out there that remember how the 2002 season started. It was the first year Bledsoe was starting at quarterback, and he was chucking the ball all over the field. I remember week two game, we're in Minnesota, this thing goes to overtime, and I think the final in the game was 45-37. I mean, it was a shootout. It was crazy.
Yeah.
And Mike Hollis was a kicker here for 1 year. He put like a 50-something yarder through it, bounced off the crossbar and through to force overtime, and then Peerless Price, this play is like super clear in my head, and I don't remember a lot of individual plays from all the games I've seen over the years,
mm-hmm.
but he makes the catch coming across the field on an angle. It wasn't like a true post pattern. I don't even know what you'd call it.
Like a slant or something?
Yeah, but it was deeper.
Oh, okay.
So he hit him like 15 yards down the field coming over the middle, and there was a linebacker coming here, so he angled his route after the catch up the field like this, and the safety's coming across the field. So he's running right to left across the width of the field at an angle. The safety's coming down hard,
mm-hmm.
and he kind of catches him out of the corner of his right eye at the last second. and he gears down, takes a jab step in the direction that he's going, and the safety just goes diving in the air for the lights out hit, and he just makes a right turn and goes to the far pylon right to the end zone. And it was like a 50-something yard touchdown, but the guy looked stupid, like flying through the air, flailing madly, and he made him look really silly. It was one of my favorite plays that I've seen, you know, from a receiver in a Bills uniform, because he just, it was a yard sale. I mean,
and that's what you would, I mean, if the both of those guys are on the field and healthy, that it's exciting.
Yeah.
And then you have Charles Clay running up the seams. It's exciting. You have to respect that. If Tyrod Taylor can hit all of those guys consistently, man, you have to respect that. And it just opens things up for Shady, who is 29 years old or 30. What is he?
29.
29, yeah. So Shady is up there in age. He has some mileage on his legs, you know. So you need to be able to back. I understand last year they were still able to get it done in the run game, but you need to back those safeties up, back those linebackers up, force them to respect your game. And that's your game down the field, which will open things up for Shady. He doesn't have to beat 8 and 9 man boxes every down.
Right. And, I mean, that also helps on swing passes.
Right.
Or because you got all those – you got four DBs, 30 yards down the field. Now you run a swing pass to the edge.
And a linebacker.
You better have linebackers that can run or you're going to have a problem.
And even if they can run, it's hard to tackle that dude. You know, you can, you might be fast getting to the sideline, but Shady will miss you. He'll make you miss.
Yeah. I got to say – and. I'm not afraid to say it since he's said it an awful lot, but you never see him take a big kill shot. You know what I mean? Like
Never.
Never takes a kill shot.
He'll go down before he takes a kill shot.
Right, but he's got the sixth sense about seeing where those guys are.
Yeah.
And, you know, he'll duck at the last second or slide under somebody.
Yeah.
Still going forward, but he'll slide under somebody, make a play, and, you know, do something like that. So I think that puts years on his career.
It does. I remember last year. He did something. He made a move. And it was like he made a move on the dude behind him. And I remember thinking to myself, like how did he even just – and I you know, I played the game. So I know you can feel different guys around you. But for him to make a move on the dude behind him just was amazing to me. And turn the field, go up the field. I was like, yeah, this dude is amazing. It's great to watch him in person.
All right. Well, entering stage right for the viewing audience at home is one Mr. Zay Jones, who was kind enough to spend some time with us. You get your work done today already? You're already
sure
all
did,
in
yeah.
the books?
Okay, yeah, good. All in the books.
Yeah, thanks for joining us. We appreciate
no problem.
You spending
you
a few
having
minutes
me.
With us. And I guess the first question is an obvious one, but how are you kind of progressing through this? I know you're back on the field all last week, and that was a step-by-step process before you were full go at the end of the week. But maybe just sum up the whole ball of wax here since getting to Buffalo.
Yeah, it's been a lot. I can say
it's been a lot.
head was spinning the first couple of days I was here. It's slowing down for me a little bit.
Yeah.
I'm getting comfortable with everything that's going on, you know, how the system works, you know, where to be, what time, just the whole schedule and thing like that. But I'm enjoying it. It's a fun process for sure.
Was there any advantage at all in knowing your position coach, the way he operates, how he talks, the words he uses, the techniques he demands? Did that at least give you one box to check off before you step foot on the field here?
Yeah, for sure. A big advantage just because of that comfortability level, just knowing him, knowing how he operates, just knowing how he is. So I knew what to expect coming in, but I'm still a rookie to the NFL. Mm-hmm. So everything's really new to me. And Coach Phil, he's really tough on me and the rest of the guys. So I wasn't expecting, like, any form of different treatment or anything like that, but just knowing who he is as a person, the things that he demands of me, and those things.
I'm just kind of real quick, Donald. I'm just kind of curious if vets are coming to you saying, "What does Coach mean by that?" Are you getting some of that because you've been around him, or?
Well, I've gotten some of you know, Coach would be like, "Hop up, demonstrate this drill," because you know
you've run
it before. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to the vets, really. You know, I'm going to Brandon Tate. I'm going to Sammy. I'm asking them, you know, hey, like, what do you think about this, or what do I need to do in this situation? So really we kind of feed off each other because I've had that experience with Coach Phil, but they have had that pro experience.
Right.
Now, you know, all coaches have those drills that they do every day, and as a player you're like, oh, here we go again with this. When you got here, was he running the same drills? And you're like, oh, my gosh, like, here we go again.
Same drills. you know, same structure, the words he uses and the phrases that he uses. I've heard all before, but it's good because he's a fundamentally sound coach, very detailed, and, you know, he critiques all the little things, and those are the things that will make you become a great wide receiver and a great football player. So it's good to hear those things said over and over again.
I got to imagine, though, too, but if he's running those same drills, you got a lot of good motor memory built up,
yeah,
too. So you're getting in and out of those break drills, like, been there, done that.
Worked with him, so I know how it goes and, you know, just how he operates. So that, it's a huge advantage to me, and I'm enjoying every step of the way.
Now, what about adjusting to quarterbacks? I know you got a week.
I was just about that.
You got a week at the Senior Bowl, you know, with Nate. So that doesn't hurt, but they're rolling them through. I mean, a lot, and you guys are obviously rolling through also because they're trying to get long looks at everybody. But how do you navigate that as a receiver? Because not only, I mean, just because you get a rep with a guy doesn't mean you're getting a throw from the guy.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. So I'm just kind of curious how you build up the time to a degree where you feel you have a rapport with everybody that's rolling through there.
Yeah. Obviously, it's going to take time, and, you know, we still have time before, you know, our first game. So there's mini camp, which is the next step. Then there's training camp. So I'm going to have plenty of opportunities to go with Tyrod or go with TJ or Cardell or Nate Peterman, whoever it is out there throwing me the football. Ultimately, though, for me, my job is to catch the football.
Yeah.
It may spin a little bit differently, being a different quarterback, or coming with different velocity or whatever it is. But for me, my fundamentals don't change. You know, eye on the point, catch the fat, do my job, and the rest is going to take care of itself.
I remember, you know, my first year, first of all, I was undrafted, so I wasn't getting that many reps. And, like, I was getting in with these different quarterbacks, and, you know, everybody, even down to, like, being in the huddle, you're trying to figure out, as a rookie, trying to figure out the playbook.
Yeah.
And quarterbacks get in the huddle, and they say it at a different speed.
Everyone's different.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And it's like,
exactly.
What? Like, what did you just say?
Yeah.
You know, how is that good for you?
I mean, that's really key because for a second, you know, when I was going through this knee deal and I was off, I could read the plays and know my responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot different when you're in the huddle and Tyrod spits a play out like that in 2 to 3 seconds. You're like, okay, what was my job?
Yeah.
Or, you know, or Cardell may come with a different pitch or speed that he says it at. So everyone's different. So it's all about, you know, getting with those guys, bonding with those guys, being a team, understanding, you know, how he may say something or how he may interpret something, and then rolling from there. But it's my job as a rookie to catch up. These guys aren't slowing down.
Mm-hmm. Right. How, you know, I think a lot of people just – And I will say this, having seen and talked to you at the Senior Bowl and then seeing you again at the Combine, I know I was hitting you up a lot on Coach McGagan, so I apologize for that. Got to play the angles, though. But in any event, there just seems to be a presence about you, just how you carry yourself. It's confident, but it's not cocky. And I'm just kind of wondering where that comes from. Do you always feel like you've kind of carried yourself that way? And maybe what kind of influence do your parents have in terms of you being that way, whether it's in a professional setting, you know, that you were exposed to with your dad or otherwise?
First off, I'd have to, you know, talk about my parents and the household that I was raised in. Without them, I wouldn't be the man I am today. And, you know, I think when you play the game of football, you have to have a level of confidence about you, the way that you carry yourself and the persona that you have.
Mm-hmm.
But in the end, this is bigger than Isaiah Jones. This is bigger than me. This is about Buffalo now. This is about this team. And so I never try to make myself bigger than this team or this organization. Like I said before, I'm only a piece of it.
Mm-hmm.
So humble yourself and you'll be exalted.
Yeah.
If you exalt yourself, you'll soon be humbled.
Right.
That's the way I look at it.
Okay.
You talked about, you know, you have the mini camps this week and then you have training camp. But what about in between there? You have any plans? Has Tyrod approached you about coming to, I believe he lives in Atlanta, coming to Atlanta or Virginia, wherever he lives?
Yeah, so I now have all these options of where I can go, you know.
And money to go.
Yeah, and money to go.
Nobody's paying your freight to get anywhere right now.
And money to go. I have a great opportunity. My younger brother, Levi, is with the USC Trojans in L.A., and my older brother is with the Vikings, and, of course, he's going to train as well. And we thought it would be a good idea if we both could train in Los Angeles and kind of be near my little brother to help him in his transition to his freshman year in college. Mm-hmm. But also now, like you said, I have the ability to fly to Atlanta, or if Tyrod's there, or fly to wherever Sammy is. And we've been in contact and we talked about those things. So we're just going to see how it goes. But yeah. I'm definitely going to be training hard.
Now, your older brother is a receiver also. He's with Minnesota right now, yes. Caleb.
Yes.
And then, but your younger brother's a linebacker, right?
Yes.
And what's his name?
Levi.
Okay, Levi. So he, now, so he, so how do you work that? I mean, the training, I got to, maybe it's not all position specific, there's enough to do together.
Yeah.
Before he's got to worry about, you know, maybe he's lifting a little differently.
Yeah, he's gotta, maybe, but this is an exciting time in all of our lives. Each playing football, just being here with each other. And, you know, there's still that aspect of conditioning, running, just that bonding and just enjoying that time that we have together. Because in season, I'm going to be in this place. Caleb's going to be flying. Levi's going to be doing – we're not going to have that,
right.
that connection, but still not losing sight of what's ultimately important, which is preparing to play football.
So is the little brother putting you up? How is that working out there? What's going on? I don't know. He's a freshman. He might still be on campus.
Yeah, he's going to probably be in a dorm or something.
For the players yes. only?
Okay. I assume they have something like that for them.
All right.
Who pushes who throughout the workouts? I mean, you know, if I had an older brother that I was training, he was playing in the league, I'm like, yo, what's up?
And we play them the first preseason.
That's right.
Yeah, so who's pushing who in the workouts?
I think we all compete at a high level. We all want to be great. And I don't think one brother would admit that the other one's better, even though I ain't saying, but
who's pushing in the workouts?
Oh, me. I'm the rabbit. I'm leading it, probably. I'm the guy up there saying, okay, let's go.
I'm sure deep down you're like, you know I'm better than
you. Yeah,
but for sure. You would never admit that.
They won't see this show.
Talk to me about how it was being the middle child.
Well,
there's stories out there about you know the middle child, and now you kind of get a little lost in the shuffle. The baby gets treated great.
Yeah.
The firstborn's always blah, blah. How was middle child life?
So I can say this. Between my brothers and I, there was about 200-plus scholarship offers, and I contributed to that one. You know, and they had the 100. Caleb was a five-star recruited everywhere. My little brother was recruited everywhere. And then here was little old me at the time, a little undersized. A lot of people passed on him, didn't quite see him to the level of his older brother or now younger brother. But I never lost sight of who I was as a person and player. I always took what I was doing seriously. I love the game of football. This is what I was born to do, and I enjoy it, and I made the most of the opportunity. And ultimately, I'm here, so none of that stuff matters.
So when did you, like, fill out? You know, because I would say most people would say – you've pretty much got a pro-ready body now, which you can't say about every draft choice. You know, that usually sometimes you don't see that jump until the second year for players because they finally have a full offseason in an NFL conditioning program. I mean, you look pro-ready. When did you fill out?
Well, first of all, thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah. And towards the end of my senior year in high school, going into my freshman year of college, I grew maybe about 2 to 3 inches.
Okay.
So I had that growth spurt, but my development and the way I approach training, I don't think will ever stop until I'm done playing this game. So I'm always trying to find ways to develop and get better and increase strength, speed, and our strength conditioning staff here is amazing. And they've already set up all the programs and stuff like that. So I'm excited for that.
Awesome. Well, listen, Zay, we really appreciate you taking time to join us in here. Good luck at mandatory minicamp this week.
Thank you.
And then enjoy the time off, although it doesn't sound like you're going to be resting on any laurels. Your brothers are going to be pushing you out there out west.
Yes, sir. I appreciate you. Thank you for having me.
That's Zay Jones, Bills wide receiver, second round pick in the 2017 NFL Draft. Back with more here on the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Back on the John Murphy Show, Chris Brown filling in for John Murphy along with Donald Jones as we head toward the end of the show, but still have some interesting stuff to talk about here the rest of the way with you for our listeners on WGR Sports Radio 550 as well as MSG Network. We thank you for joining us. And the person who we're going to have next on the show really needs no introduction. But we will introduce her nonetheless, so you know who right. we're talking to. But it's Mary Wilson, wife of Bill's founder and former owner, Ralph Wilson. And we wanted to get her on the line because she's going to be part of an interesting television series that's coming up on MSG, debuting tonight at 9 p.m. And it's going to have the first installment, which deals with the top 10 most memorable moments in Bill's history. And obviously, Mrs. Wilson has seen an awful lot of memorable moments. So we wanted to get her on the line. And Mrs. Wilson, thanks very much for joining us here. You're talking with Chris and Donald.
Well, it's thank you for calling me and asking me to be a part of it. I'm sitting here in Michigan, and it's about 90 outside. And love always talking about the Bills and Buffalo.
So I guess we should begin with when you first were approached, to be asked to sit down and interview and answer some questions about, your memories, obviously, is some of the best moments in Bill's history. So I know Mike Adamek is kind of the producer of this video series. So what were your initial thoughts, when you got the call and were asked to sit down?
Well, I did sit down, and I sat down on a Saturday when I was there for my girls in sports program. And first of all, it was the absolute pinnacle of Ralph's life. So I was lucky to be there for that and to be with him and to see his joy of, number one, getting to a Super Bowl was just so amazing. And being there for the greatest comeback and the joy in that box that day and the fans, at our Super Bowl party that year, we actually gave away hats signed, and it was had Frank Wright on it, and it's Never Never Leave Early hats, and so that was one of the most memorable moments. And of course, there were lows, but Ralph always got over those. And the lowest moment he ever felt, I think, was out in California where he lost. In Pasadena, and it was such a bad loss, and I've never seen him so distraught, but that took a day. So Ralph had the ability to move forward, and that's sort of a great thing that I've taken from him.
Mary, I understand you have a lot of different memories from the years, but what's the when you think about the Bills, is there one memory that sticks out first?
Absolutely. Well, for me, the most memorable moment, number one, was ever meeting Ralph, and number two, looking back on it, coming to Buffalo the first time in 1990, of course, not realizing what I was about to be a part of, and at least be there to see Ralph help bring his team to this level of perfection. Almost. And I guess the saddest part is not winning one, but just getting there in the joy that he had. But the most amazing moment was that comeback and going on to the Super Bowl. I mean, the comeback game has got to be the most memorable. At that halftime, it was so strange because the weather was changing, and I just was yelling in the box, "Come on, don't give up. We can do it. I know we're going to do it. I can see. Look at the weather." It did. I mean, everything just changed in that game in the second half, even though they came right out and scored again. But it was that had to be the most memorable. But the absolute, obviously, another pinnacle of Ralph's life was going into the Hall of Fame, and those 4 days in Canton were absolutely extraordinary. But that would have to be the most amazing moment. And of course, there were wide right was not that was tough. But just getting there and being there for all of that and being a part of Ralph's joy and really, really at the pinnacle of his life, I was so fortunate to be there.
And I know you weren't there for this, but I'm sure Ralph shared with you an awful lot about, when this was a fledgling franchise. And I think a lot of people are of the belief that there's probably a pretty good chance that the founding of this franchise is on the list for you know, top 10 memorable moments, because without that, we're not talking about any of this. So
what
might he have shared with you,
well,
you know, about putting this together?
One thing he shared is that they used to call him Cheap. Cheap there. He used to tell me about that. And, you know, I never really saw that because I came, you know, at this period of time. And, you know, the fans were just so thankful of Ralph. And I would say that that's one of the great highlights of being a part of all this, is getting to be around the fans and how much they respected Ralph and how much they were thanking him. And instead of coming up and asking for an autograph, they would come up, shake his hand, and say thank you. And, I mean, how amazing is that? But just being there was extraordinary, the whole thing. And you know, as he said in his Hall of Fame speech, he was lucky to come to Buffalo. And the thing about how they really meshed was Ralph was a very humble person, and Buffalo is very much like that, not showy, show off, you know. It's just great people to be with and around.
Mary, you talked about, you know, you do so many different things involving women in sports. The Bills announced last week that they had brought in Phoebe Schechter, right?
For the
coaching intern,
yep,
program. You know, what are your thoughts on just how we are coming along in terms of women, more and more women getting into sports?
Well, as you know, Title IX, I can't remember what year it is. I think it might be, I can't remember exactly what year. They're having a celebration of exactly what year Title IX was. That changed the landscape of women in sports, because it really gave you something to aim for. There are so many scholarships now for women. But more than that, I think people are coming to the understanding of how important sports is for everyone. The integrity you learn from winning, losing, being on a team. But that's my passion, is girls in sports. And it's not about being the best. It's about participating and you know, Ralph's daughter, number one, she was a good tennis player, and she understood athletics and was a good scout. So I think there should be more women in scouting, and she was the only one. And I'm not sure why more women are not invited into that arena, because, you know, women, there are great women coaches in the country.
Yeah.
But, I think that's I think we've come a long way, baby.
Ralph Wilson, Jr. Foundation trustee, Mary Wilson, joining us here on the John Murphy Show, talking about the television series that's going to begin tonight on MSG, Top 10 Moments in Bills History. And Mrs. Wilson, I know you're probably outside the viewing area for this program. Have you been promised copies of the promised copies of the episodes?
They did. They promised they would get that to me. And I was just in Buffalo last week. I love coming there and being a part of so much that our foundation is going to be doing. Ralph's foundation is going to be doing there and is doing there. And so I'm sorry I'm not there to see it tonight, but they will get me a copy. And I'm very excited about it, and I can't remember exactly what I said.
That's right. Yeah. That's almost
being interviewed.
That's almost what you're anticipating more, right? Well, where
know,
do I fit in here?
Now, what did I say here? I can't remember. But I know. I talked about the greatest comeback. Who doesn't?
That was a smart move. You'll probably be in there then.
Right. Yeah, 100% in there.
Well, listen, it was great to catch up and talk with you.
Thank you.
You know, we look forward to seeing you in that, along with all the other elements of the production that's been put together. Thanks for spending some time with us this afternoon.
I'm looking forward to seeing it, and thank you for your time.
All right.
Have a great day.
Take care. Bye-bye. That's Mary Wilson, Ralph Wilson Jr. Foundation trustee, shedding some light on some of her involvement in the debut tonight of the television series, which will begin with the first installment, Top 10 Moments in Bills History. These will be airing every Monday, with the exception of the July 4th week, over the next five weeks, I should say. Really a nice video series that's been put together by Buffalo Bills Entertainment and the folks here at One Bills Drive that I work closely with a lot of the time. Believe me, I did no heavy lifting in this whatsoever. You know, they asked me for
work.
they asked me for a second here or a second there, and I said, sure, you know, let me read that track for you or do this. But those guys have been, like,
what?
Chained to their laptops and editing machines and really pounding away back there. So we're really looking forward to the final product as these will air at 9 p.m. on Mondays for the next 5 weeks, like I said, just with the exception of July 4th week. So it'll start with top 10 moments in team history, top 10 offensive players and defensive players, draft diamonds, which are late draft picks, not right. First, second, or third rounders, and then top 10 individual performances. That one should be fun. And a lot of this is going to be open to debate, too, as to who should have been on the list, who might have got left off the list, who was an honorable mention. It just sparks a lot of fun debate, so we're really looking forward to it. But Donald and I will be back with one final segment here. We'll step aside briefly and be back with a little bit more here on the John Murphy Show to wrap things up and put a bow on Monday's program. It's the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. From One Bills Drive, this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
The John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
And now, what have we learned from today's show?
Time for What Have We Learned, brought to you by Advanced Alarm. We had Andy Benoit, the writer for MMQB and an NFL analyst for Sports Illustrated, on the show today. And he kind of explained for us how he sees Jeremy Maclin as an NFL receiver now.
If we're just to generalize it across the league, I think Jeremy Maclin's a very high-quality, number two, solid starting-type wide receiver. To me, Donald, a true number one, and you can probably attest to this, a true number one's a guy that you can put as an ex-ISO or put him by himself on the weak side of the formation and trust that he's going to impact the corner and the safety. You build your routes that way. Number one takes safeties no matter where they are and what side of the field. And Jeremy Maclin, he's never been a guy. He's not a Dez Bryant or an A.J. Green where you just put him anywhere on the field and that dictates what the safety does. He doesn't dictate coverages that way.
We also had Bill's second-round pick, Zay Jones, on the show this afternoon, and he gave us his outlook on his role on this team as a Bills rookie.
First off, I would have to, you know, talk about my parents and the household that I was raised in. Without them, I wouldn't be the man I am today. And, you know, I think when you play the game of football, you have to have a level of confidence about you, the way that you carry yourself and the persona that you have. Mm-hmm. But in the end, this is bigger than Isaiah Jones. This is bigger than me. This is about Buffalo now. This is about this team. And so I never try to make myself bigger than this team or this organization. Like I said before, I'm only a piece of it. Mm-hmm. So humble yourself and you'll be exalted.
Yeah.
If you exalt yourself, you'll soon be humble.
Right.
That's the way I look at it.
So that's kind of the show in a nutshell in terms of what we learned.
Yeah.
We learned a couple other things, I think.
We're still waiting to learn.
We learned that Eddie Lacy made weight today. Good for him.
Did.
He's doing P90X. Did you know that? That's what
he's losing weight.
Which I've done, and
I've never done
it. Largely a strength program. There is other stuff in there, but a lot of pull-ups, dude. A lot of pull-ups.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't.
So there's that. I gotta bounce this off you, okay? The Olympics, 2020 in Tokyo. Okay. We know about all these sports that are getting added seemingly all the time. I mean, we remember that rhythmic gymnastics when they're running around with the ribbon or throwing the ball up and around. That was ridiculous back in the 80s and 90s. I mean, really, what are we doing out there? With a little ribbon running around? Like, this is,
yeah, that's a sport.
Come on. What are we doing? Well, we've jumped the shark now.
Can I have to watch this on TV?
We've jumped the shark now. You know, we've had basketball, and it's perfectly fine the way it is.
Mm-hmm.
Now the IOC has voted to add 3-on-3 basketball, half-court format, for the 2020 Tokyo Olympics. Thoughts?
Well, first of all, does Ice Cube have anything to do with this?
There's no mention of him in this write-up that I've got here.
I mean, my first thoughts are, who's going to play? If you have the basketball team that plays, I mean, who else is playing in
this? How do you find your team?
Right.
Like, how
I mean, you're just getting guys off the streets? Yeah, it must be. Like, street ballers?
Well, it sounds that way because the quote is, it comes from Patrick Bowman, Secretary General of Basketball Governing Body, FIBA. says, the dream of a path from the streets to the Olympic Games has become reality for all the basketball community. And I respect inclusiveness as much as the next person, but...
Come on, man.
Can we go back to 5-on-5?
Yeah.
Like, what are we doing?
Keep it 5-on-5.
What, are we going to add the four-point shot next? I mean
they're going to get some street ballers.
They already have
China.
The Harlem Globetrotters do that at their games, in case you didn't know.
They got some street ballers from China. They got a street league.
Don't worry. In another move towards street sports, BMX freestyle cycling is also joining the Olympics for the first time, among a net increase of 15 gold medals in a 321-event program.
Ooh.
It's getting too big.
Yeah.
Too big, too spread out, too watered down. I'm gonna have to boycott. I may have to boycott the Olympics. I can't do it anymore.
You're going to boycott the Olympics?
I want to go back to the roots of track and field. They're cutting 105 track and field athletes.
Really?
Because of these other sports.
That is ridiculous.
See, now you're
track
on my
and
side.
Track and field is what we all watch.
That'll do it for us today. John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. Murph, back tomorrow. We'll see you then.